Touchdown, baby!
Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Connor McKnight, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Welcome into The Beat, 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Mark Carmen.
Good afternoon. Hi.
We got Chicago sports conversation all throughout the afternoon, 3 until 7:15 this evening. We'll walk you right up to Northwestern basketball. Have a great afternoon of conversation planned for you. A lot of things to get to. I mean, really, just a lot of things to get to. The Cubs convention is going on. You got some news with Jake Arrieta. You've got the Bulls doing their up and down kind of thing. I mean, Jimmy Butler goes for 53 the other night. And then for last night, kind of a weird up and down. And then you've got the NFL moving to L.A., too, on a national perspective. As you're sitting down and, you know, getting ready to watch yourself some divisional round playoff, you've got two probably brand new teams, or at least teams playing in a new spot or an old spot. But once again, there in L.A. are the Chargers and Rams. So we got plenty to get to throughout the course of the day.
I was having the greatest night ever in my early Friday, watching the Cubs convention as they're announcing former Cub after former Cub, and the crowd's going crazy. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Air. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Stoddard.
Oh my God!
I mean, it was unbelievable. I'm like, how is this possible? Why would you do that? And no disrespect to any of these guys who made it to the big leagues, but come on. Like, it was just incredible to me. And the crowd's like, yes, Stoddard. Like,
Scott Air.
You don't even know these – you don't even remember these guys, let alone they didn't really ever do anything. But then I switched over and put on the Bulls basketball, and I was, you know, interested to see if Jimmy could back it up and how Derek would look after missing a game with the jumpers knee, patellar tendonitis, whatever. And one of my guys, Joakim Noah, gets his shoulder caught and it falls out and dislocation. He's running off the court and screaming out F-bombs, and his career as a Bull may be over.
But it hurts. It hurts a lot to lose your shoulder like that. You know, completely have an arm removed from your body actually is somewhat painful.
Can you, I mean, his left shoulder, whatever.
Oh, it was gross.
It was disgusting. Gross. And for a professional athlete who... You know,
needs a shoulder? Is that where you're going with this?
Yes, and like is used to taking on pain, right? This guy's been through knee surgeries and he's battling all day long to be the best guy he can be. To lose his shoulder and have that much outward emotion, well, that was some real pain.
That kind of real pain. That's what we're talking about here. This is no, you know, Willis Reed, I'll be back and make two shots and then Clyde can take over the rest of the way. No, this is a real thing.
I looked at him like, your career may be over as a Bull, and it was almost like it kind of resonated with him that it was done.
Do you want to get to the actual call? This is how it actually sounded over there. Go ahead, Mike.
Graham, he's loose again, down into the lane. Fights run up, though. McGee, and a whistle, and another foul. That's on Joe. And he looks to be hurt again. That's a loose ball foul on Joe, but you can see him going straight back to the locker room. Boy, that's not good.
I mean, he ran 94 feet across the entire court. The United Center is looking out like, oh, there goes number 13, and we may never see him again in a Bulls tank top. He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Highlight courtesy of WGN TV, Neil Funk and Stacey King on the call. Yeah, I'm actually debating, because I don't do well watching these things. I don't. I can't, you know, see the injuries or, you know, the kickboxer who breaks his leg in half when he's trying to fight a guy. All those kind of things. You know, the Willis McGahee knee thing. I can't watch him again. I even seeing them The Louisville kid, Kevin Ware.
Kevin Ware was gross. Joe Theismann. Oh, Joe Theismann was maybe the grossest back in the day.
Well, because you can hear you can hear it. That's not, you can hear it like a shotgun, the Theismann thing. And then the first guy there is Taylor, LT, screaming at the sidelines, oh my God, I just killed him. Like, bring over the med cart. This guy's dead. I think I just killed him.
Paul George was pretty bad, too.
He was,
oh God, the Paul. Sean Livingston underneath the basket when he was playing for the Clippers the first time he blew out his knee?
Yeah, the first time.
The first time, because the second time was also gross. The first time, much more gross.
The knee blowout is disgusting, but the actual bone break and skin, and that's...
I'm debating going back and watching the Noah thing again.
You should do it.
The highlights are on.
It's not as bad as the others.
No, it's not. But it's just this weird place of... Okay, so let's... Vincent Goodwill's going to stop by in the 3 o'clock hour here, and we're going to talk Bulls with him.
He hates the Bulls.
Of course, the Bulls insider, CSN Chicago and CSNChicago.com. We'll talk a little L.A. football with Travis Rogers and Ben Fredrickson. Get the point of view of the guy welcoming in the team to L.A. and the point of view of the guy who just lost a franchise.
There's one thing I like
in
about
St. Louis.
The Rams going to L.A., and there's a lot that I don't.
There's also ways you can get involved with the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. You can also text that very same number, and we read your texts and all that kind of stuff. You do the Twitter thing if you are so inclined. It is at WGN The Beat. I am at McKnight underscore WGN. He is at The Carm, because the man needs an article.
I'm getting emotional.
I know you are. I know you're
right there. That was it.
That one hurt you?
I don't know if I can move
Fair enough.
Move forward.
All right, let's try the best we can.
Congratulations to Connor.
So what we're looking at here, I think, is a conversation where there were questions and rumors, right? I mean, reports and rumors that the Bulls were kind of looking around and saying, listen, we're not necessarily putting guys on the market at this point, but we're listening to anybody who wants to come knocking. You know, we're listening to anybody who wants to make a nice offer, a decent kind of offer for some pieces, some front court pieces.
Well, right. I mean, they've got Bobby Portis, and he's played well, so you want to get minutes for him. And
I think you want to get him some run.
Right, and even more importantly than that, you've got Joakim Noah at the end of the year, free agent, who it seems like they are at least at the bare minimum 50-50 on bringing back, if not way less than that.
Well, I don't think you were going to be able to move him. I'm just talking about what might be possible for them to do at this point. I don't think even, you know, before last night, Joe was going to get you. I don't know how interested you are if you're a contender in Joakim Noah.
Well, I would be interested in that because that's
Nobody is. Obviously the injury throws everything off. I'm just saying, you know, as of 24 hours ago, 48 hours ago, I don't know where that was.
Right. I mean, a glue guy, energy, going to be a great teammate. I would think he'd be a great piece to put somebody over the top. Now, are they going to give up an elite young player? No,
of course not. You're going to get, and you've got to make the money work too. And I don't know how willing another team, a contender, would be to make that money work.
I had him to the Knicks for an Aaron Aflalo. That was the best deal that I was coming up with. Maybe throw in
that money works too, right? Aflalo got that 4-year, $50 million thing over in Denver at the time.
Joe's making around, I think, 11, and Aflalo's making 8, and it worked. And you could throw in a Jose Calderon and get two guards.
Oh God, I watched it again.
There it is.
Oh God, I watched it again. You know the highlights, the autoplay thing. I'm sorry to interrupt. The autoplay feature on the website, you know, where the videos just start going for you. It happened.
It sucks.
It happened, and I was it's disgusting.
And you know, it's interesting too because I was listening to Hoiberg in his post game, and he's talking. You know, people are asking the question: did Noah going out have any effect on the game? Because the Bulls were up 10 at half, and then they end up losing and scoring basically no points in the second half and falling to the Mavs. And granted, it was 4 and 5 nights, and they were tired and all that. But yes, they're human beings. This is a guy that's been here his entire career. He's basically the heart and soul of the team. Seeing somebody lose their shoulder in the middle of the game, and then you go in to halftime, and he's laying on the table, and you basically know his season is done, or very well could be, and maybe even his career with the Bulls is done. It's going to have an impact on the team. Not that it's one regular season game of 82.
Right.
But I just thought it was kind of odd as Hoiberg's response that it did it. No, that's not an excuse. Well, yeah, maybe it's not an excuse, but of course it did.
Yeah, excuse is different than a factor. You know, excuse is factor than a reason. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to lay that out there as like, we couldn't get it done because of what happened to Joe, and we're all really sorry about that. You've seen these things happen before. This is a team that's seen Derrick Rose.
Right.
Many, many times over, leave games, and some have looked worse than they actually were. Some have been as bad as they ended up being. That's a team that's seen this happen before. Because, of course, nobody's laying out there as an excuse.
No question. But they're human beings. I mean, listen, and maybe I'm nitpicking that answer too much, but a fair answer to me would have been something along the lines of, it's no way to really measure it, but I would think seeing one of the leaders go down in the team is not something great for the psyche in the middle of a game.
I have a proposition for you on the other side of a quick break here about the Bulls and whether or not there's a thing they have to do at this point, knowing what you've got, knowing what you've seen, whether there's something you absolutely have to do. Before we get to that, even when you can't be there, they are. It's Chicago Tribune Sports Plus with more coverage from more journalists than anywhere else in the city. Join now at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. 312-981-7200, talking about the Bulls and exactly what needs to be done as they try and find their way and, I guess, their place in the Eastern Conference. He's Mark. I'm Connor. You get the beat, 720 WGN.
It hurt. Just knowing how hard he works, how hard he wants to be on the court. How much it means to this team, like, it's devastating, but guys that come in, you got to make sure that they're ready. Everybody has to be ready because you never know.
No, I didn't really get a chance to talk to him before that. I went in right after the halftime, and we all checked on him, but we don't know the severity of it right now. But the look on his face, it was just crazy.
This is Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson talking about the injury to Joakim Noah from last night. Shoulder kind of wrenched apart, and he's been dealing with issues like that for a while now.
I'm not a doctor, but the second time something like that pops, it's worse than the first time, and he's probably injured further into that shoulder than he did the first time. I would think surgery is coming for Joakim, and I would think he'd be able to get back, but I don't know if it's going to be this year. It actually might, Connor. It might play for the Bulls. I mean, if Pau decides to leave, which I would bet.
Oh, Pau's going.
Yeah, I bet.
He's opting out.
Right.
Now, whether the Bulls sign him back or not, that's another question altogether. Probably not. But he's opting out of his deal.
And I think Pau is probably running from the city. I think he had a great time going to the opera here and probably enjoyed being, you know, in Chicago with all the different cultural benefits of playing basketball here. But as far as being on this team the last 2 years, the whole Tibbs thing and now what's going on, he's running from that at the end of his career, I would think. That might, you know, the Bulls might be in a position where they look around and Noah coming off a surgery where he's not going to get paid perhaps what he wanted to get paid. It might happen that he falls back to them despite the fact that in Fred Hoiberg's system,
falls back to him.
Yeah, he's not an ideal fit.
It's watching this thing. Watching this thing a couple of days, he's not really doing anything that the shoulder comes out. He's just kind of grabbing at to position himself for a board or work himself around a blockout, and it just gets kind of torn out of his shoulder. And you're right. You do this twice. Each time you do it, it destroys more and it gets compressively worse,
right?
Compound worse.
I mean, if you look at how the first injury looked compared to how the second injury looked,
right.
I mean, it's night and day. And yeah, he was trying to box out JaVale McGee, who was a gangly, awkward guy himself, and
his arm's kind of like at a 90-degree angle, right? And he's got McGee kind of at the elbow, not the elbow on the floor, but McGee's actual elbow. And then he goes to jump. JaVale McGee goes to jump, and that takes Noah's arm out and out and away from his body.
Well, and here's
and out of his body.
Here's another thing too, because the people in this city, they love to kill on Derrick Rose for being soft and not playing through pain. Look, Noah wasn't out that long when he came back, and I'm always the guy that's like, hey, are you sure you're all right? Because if you sit another month, maybe it's just that much stronger, and something like this doesn't happen. In the Sixers game, he was trailing on a fast break, gets a pass coming down the lane, goes up for the dunk, gets hit from behind. And right after he got hit, he's rubbing that shoulder, and I'm like, oh, my God, it went. And it didn't, and he was icing it after the game,
right?
And he was okay to get out. But it was clear that he wasn't 100%. And it's one thing if you're a guard, right? But a big man constantly boxing out, you're living your life in the paint. I mean, you got to
have it working. You can't.
You got to be 100%.
No, that's an injury you're not working through, I don't think. Not that kind of devastation. So I have a question for you, I guess. Is there something that the Bulls have to do now? I mean, you could have, I guess maybe you were looking to upgrade at the 3 spot prior to the injury.
Again, I don't know that you were getting a whole lot for Joakim Noah. If the Bulls did indeed move him. You said Powell's going to opt out, and I'm right there with you. I think Powell's going to opt out. Can you move him?
Sure.
Can you find a rent-a-center for a Pau Gasol at this point? Is there a contender that you feel comfortable would take a leap with Pau Gasol even as a rental player? I'm not talking you get rich in a trade. I'm just saying, is there somebody that doesn't mind an expiring contract, or what's going to be an expiring contract because the dude's going to opt out? I guess that team has to assume some of that risk, but I think at this point you kind of have to start looking at options to, and not because of the Noah injury itself, but I'm just talking about what you were looking at even before that, you know?
Right. Well, listen, if the Bulls are willing to say that they're not going to do anything this year, which would be a fair thing to say, right, then... And if you don't think Powell's coming back, well, then, maybe you do make the best trade. One team that was begging to, get Powell back in the day, and maybe Powell regrets doing it, was the San Antonio Spurs. Looking at their roster as to how to make the money work there, it's going to be real difficult. I mean, would they trade Powell for Boris Diaw? I mean, that doesn't do anything for the Bulls. That money matches up nicely. I mean, other than that, you look at their roster, there's really not a whole lot there, so that's not a fit. I'm going to spend the 3:30 news coming up with the best Pau trade I can come up with in the next 5 minutes.
Find me something in Miami. If there's something in Miami that might work for Pau Gasol. The thing is, though, is if you're not going to... If Pau Gasol is your best trade chip, mm-hmm. if that's kind of... Because he's, technically an... not technically, but because he's probably going to be an expiring contract. If you can't get something back that's also going to give you the financial relief going into this offseason to try and... somehow position yourself for KD, for Kevin Durant, then I don't know what's worth doing. You know what I mean? I don't know what's worth trading.
That's another fair point.
Like, the expiration of that contract in and of itself might be the most valuable thing you can have.
Right. And listen, it's a long NBA season. And the Bulls, it's a huge stretch to say they're going to get back in it. But in the Eastern Conference, there's one team.
There is.
And if there's one big injury there, I mean, where are you then? Now
you're not wrong. I understand where you're at.
I'm just saying, if you're getting minimal in return, why not ride the thing out?
You see what Kyrie Irving's been up to the last handful of games, though? Like dribbling through five or six people. I'm not saying that he can.
He had a huge game, but then also Tony Parker crushed him. And
just absolutely destroyed him.
So there was that.
Destroyed that man.
There was that as well. So... But yes, Cleveland is the prohibitive favorite by 7 miles.
Find me a place for Pau Gasol during the 3:30 news. We'll go to break here in just a second, but I will tell you this. The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white. It's presented in a special one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2K's calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and this is the first year it's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that'll change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that is completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the feature section. Make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2K's calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com.
3:30 news straight ahead. We'll give you a trade and also keep you up to date on the Patriots and the Chiefs. If anything happens in any game, or the one game that's going on,
any other game that's being played anywhere in the country.
We'll do that too, 720 WGN.
I know you don't like the Michael comparison.
No, don't do it. Don't talk about it.
But you scored the most points, 53, since he scored 55 in 97. When you hear that, what do you think?
Michael's the best player to ever play this game, and I'm just playing my role on this team. That's all I think about. And I wear his shoes, so I think he's got a couple notches up on me, a lot of them, actually.
I actually like that a lot. That's Jimmy Butler talking to, is that Nick?
That was Nick Friedel.
Sounded like Nick. After the 53-pointer, you heard Nick say it. His 53, Jimmy's 53, the most since Jordan put up 55. The comparison, can you rep Mike Jacobson, our producer on the other side? Can you rack that up again and let me know when you got it? Because I like the beginning a lot when Jimmy's like, well, then don't do it. Well, then don't.
Well, here's the thing. Like,
I love it.
And God bless Jimmy. But Jimmy
and Nick too for asking. I'm not saying it was a stupid question. I don't mean to say that he did a bad job there. I'm just saying I love the back and forth.
Nick Friedel's never asked a bad question. The man's a genius, and I love him. I'm not saying anything bad about Nick Friedel ever and always. But my point is what I'm trying to get to here is Jimmy and Jimmy goes around and will scream things out around his teammates like, "Ain't nobody on the planet that can do what I can do except for one man." And the one man he's talking about is Michael Jeffrey Jordan. So when Jimmy is saying don't do it, Nick really isn't comparing you to Jordan, but he wants to be compared in some weird Jimmy way.
I know you don't like the Michael comparison.
No, don't do it. Don't talk about it.
But you scored the most points, 53, since he scored 55 in 97.
Don't do it.
When you hear that.
Don't do it.
Now it's like settling
Michael's again. The best player to ever play this game, and I'm just playing my role on this team. That's all I think about. And I wear his shoes, so... I think he's got a couple notches up on me, a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, no, I think, Jimmy, I think you're right. Although I think I've changed the way maybe I evaluate Jimmy Butler. Even from the beginning of this season to now, I don't know if that makes any sense. Because we saw what last season made of Jimmy Butler, or I should say what Jimmy made of last season, right? I mean, you saw that kind of explosion. You saw the offense take off. You saw a game evolving in a way that, I mean, listen, I talked to a bunch of scouts. I did a show the day that draft happened. We had his former college coach, Buzz Williams, on the show. I mean, we talked about this guy and what that draft was going to look like and who he was. And at the time, it was, you know, responsible defensive guy, you know, guy who can fill it up a little bit from the jump, you know, that kind of thing. A decent pick. Not a bad guy who could grow into a pretty good role player for you. It wasn't this. It was never this.
No, and see...
It was never this.
No, and that's what you have to respect most about Jimmy, because Jimmy's a worker. He's a super talented guy like everybody is in the NBA, but this guy's been in the gym, and he has not put a ceiling on himself. And after last season and getting paid, he didn't have to have a summer where he went 5 a.m. lunatic workouts in, you know, inspired by Mark Wahlberg, which that piece was out in the Tribune by KC, and... who also does a phenomenal job, by the way, covering the Chicago Bulls. I mean, listen, he doesn't have to be that motivated, but he is. And I always said, like, and we've had this conversation, he looks to me like the ball should be going. And when he wasn't a scorer, like, it looked like the form's solid. His base was there, and I couldn't quite get how he was such a bad, like, low 40% shooter.
I see what you mean, yeah.
And it just looked like he should be better. But I didn't think he was going to, I mean, in the 53-point game, granted it was against the Sixers, guy's making step backs, he's nailing threes, he's going to the hole, he's taking on contact, he's shooting 25 free throws. I mean, I certainly, and I don't think anybody else did, saw this coming. It's big time.
Well, it's weird, you know, we talk about where this team is and, you know, what it needs to be going forward. Obviously, it has Jimmy at the forefront. You know, as you've got Derek for the next two seasons as well, and... you know, whether it's Powell opting, Powell's going to opt out. I mean, how it gets constructed, you know, going forward. I think you try and move a couple of things around. I think you can.
Yes.
Maybe you can.
Yes.
I hate to say rebuild because you can't tear this thing down. There's not a tear down. I mean, look,
you
the
could.
Sixers tried. You wouldn't be able to do it all that successfully, I don't think.
No, but you could trade
not
Powell.
Not the way it's constituted now.
Right, but you could trade Powell. You could trade Taj. And you're not going to trade Joe now. The three spots, obviously, a huge issue for them. You drafted Snell, stinks. Drafted McDermott, stinks.
Yeah.
Right now, maybe they'll get better. Maybe. So that's a huge issue.
Did you find me a move for Powell?
I promised during the
3:30 news that you were going to find me a move
for
Powell. We love to wildly speculate with trades here. We really do.
Well, hey, listen, they're making calls.
Well, in the NBA, it's a little bit easier. It's more difficult, but it's also easier because you have to find the money to work it.
Right.
You know, it has to. You that's just how these things work in the NBA. You got to find money to go both ways. So it's in some ways it's like, oh well, this matches and this matches and this matches. So it could happen. You know, that's why the trade calculator on the Mothership website is so much fun.
This is not a great deal for the Bulls, but it does work money wise. Oklahoma City.
Well, I don't think for Powell, I don't think you're getting
right. You got to roll the dice.
I don't think you're getting younger and better. I think you're just trying to move things and give yourself a little flexibility.
Well, here you go. The Thunder, they were very interested in Powell when he was a free agent. They're a championship contender. They need help at center. Powell's going to fit in quickly with anyone. I would think he'd blend well with Westbrook and Durant in a second. Powell, too.
Well, that's a guy, too. Powell's a guy where, on that squad, you can leave him out kind of with the second unit.
Sure.
I mean, you don't have to burn him the entire way with KD and... Westbrook.
He'd fit. You got Ibaka at the four. I mean, it would fit. So, anyway, the money working there would be Deion Waiters and Nick Collison. I know.
Okay.
I know. Deion Waiters. Great. But Deion Waiters is a free agent at the end of the year.
So that's what you want?
So that money's $5.1 million that's free.
That's what Deion is?
Yeah. And then Nick Collison is, energy guy, end of the bench, veteran. He's got 1 year left after this season.
I didn't say it was going to be fun. Just said we'd do it.
I mean, if I adjusted the trade, and I mean, I'm looking around at a bunch of teams. I mean, maybe you could weasel out an Anthony Morrow from them. Maybe.
Boy,
But now you're taking two guards.
Boy, the fun just really ratchets up, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you want to bring...
You know what we ought to do? Talk to a guy who covers the team on a daily basis, Vincent Goodwill.
He walked by me.
Could we do that? Vincent did, or Powell, or Nick Collison? Who are we talking about?
Well, Vincent and Powell, but Vincent is who I'm talking about. We'll talk about what Vincent said to me in a very rude manner on Monday night versus the Wizards coming back here. Vinny, Comcast Sportsnet, talking Bulls, 720 WGN.
3:45 here on the beat, 720 WGN. Talk a little Bulls with you. The injury to Joakim Noah, the future for Pau Gasol, and indeed, just kind of taking a glance and admiring Jimmy Butler for what it is, doing the best we can. From CSN Chicago and CSNChicago.com and on Twitter at VGoodwill, it is Vincent Goodwill going to join us here to talk a little Bulls. Hey, Vincent, what's up?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Not too much. Talk a little Bulls. Wanted to, actually, before we do anything, anything we need to know now or anything that's come up today with Joakim, anything, any results on anything yet or what the procedure is for him today, tomorrow?
Well, from what I've heard, nothing has been determined yet from the MRI. I'm not sure if it has been done. I would reckon that if it is, it's going to be done probably maybe tomorrow, maybe later tonight. From what I understand, I know that Joakim is in, at least now, in relatively good spirits, and he's looking at it optimistically. Whatever that means as far as procedure-wise, you know, nobody knows, but, you know, at least his head is in a better place than maybe what it was 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you, if you're Joakim Noah, though, Vincent Goodwill, shouldn't you be looking at your long-term future rather than trying to get back on the court right now? He is a free agent at the end of the year. I would think that's got to be creeping around in his head. What's the best play for me?
It has to be. I mean, I don't care how much you bleed Bulls red. You know, when you're at this stage, when you're at this age, and all the things that have happened over the past year, let's not forget, you know, he tried to drag himself out there onto a playoff game in Philadelphia a few years back. You know, he dragged himself out to help them win in Game 7 against Brooklyn a couple years back. And even last year, he was struggling, you know, struggling with the knee and everything else. So, you know, all those things add up. And it also makes you look at your long-term future, especially with his age, and say, you know what, okay, regardless of what happens here, what is my next step going to be? This is one of those things where, you know, during those quiet moments, you know, in a hospital room or in a training room or something like that, you really begin to contemplate the reality of your situation.
How does his injury, I mean, I think you can speculate that it's going to be a minute for Joe to return to the court. I mean, that once you start pulling that shoulder more times than one, each time it gets worse, the shoulder's a really messed up joint anyway. I don't know how we figured that whole thing. It's just a nightmare in there. Does his injury change the long term here or the short term any, what the Bulls' options are?
Well, I mean, if what you mean is, saying, okay, we're going to make a trade now. If you make a trade and you're giving up, let's say, okay, Pau Gasol's going to opt out.
Right.
And we want to trade him. Okay, then who do you trot out there in the present? You know, that's always the thing. Like, you're not going to trade Pau for another big. No team is going to give you a big that they have on a reasonable contract for a 4 to 5 month Pau Gasol rental. You know, and that's kind of the spot that the organization, the front office, sort of paint themselves into is, you know, when they touted that Fred Hoiberg is the change we can all believe in, and the roster is fine, and if the previous coach has to go for whatever reason, you have to make some type of tacit admission that if you make a trade, that the roster isn't what you thought it was. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure if there's a trade out there that really gets them where they want to go, you know, that sets them up in the short term and a long term. B, I'm also not sure if they're ready to say, okay, you know what, with the East the way it is, let's take a step back.
Right, and I'm completely with you because I don't think that they're ready to say that the season's over. And now, without Noah, you trade Powell. The season is over because you don't have the depth to fill it, and you're not going to start Taj Gibson at center along with Bobby Portis. What do you think? Because there was a lot of stuff around, Vincent, that the Bulls have been talking about Taj and Noah and Powell. Do you think they were going to make a trade had he not gotten hurt?
That's such a difficult question to answer about something that they would have done in the future had this circumstance not popped up.
We could work in another hypothetical or two for you if you want. I mean, we just keep on piling.
I understand the question. I mean, it's reasonable,
right?
Because they had a surplus at one spot and a shortage at another. I mean, clearly, you don't want to go into a playoff run with your swingmen being Doug McDermott, Tony Snell, and 35-year-old Mike Dunleavy, who you're not sure what he's going to be able to give you. So do I think that they were going to try to do something to balance out the roster? Yes. Common sense and reason, if these guys are as serious as they say they are, because of this market being what it is, you have to be able to explore those type of things. Now, which player had to go, which player was going to go, you know, that's the hard thing to explore. I mean, if you look at it, you know, everybody comes with question marks, you know, as far as who you're going to trade. If I'm listening to Gar and John Paxson, and they're offering me Taj Gibson, I'm saying, okay, Taj is on a reasonable contract, but what about his body? If they're saying Pau Gasol, you know, I'm saying, well, I'm not sure what he's going to do come the summer. If they're saying Joakim Noah before he gets hurt, I'm saying, what about his future and the future of his body? You know what I'm saying? So there's questions.
Right. They weren't getting
all, which sort of compromises the conversation anyway.
Right. I mean, they weren't going to get much back for anyone. Basically, is the bottom line. Well, here let's spin it a different way, if we can here. Let's talk about Jimmy and him putting up 53, and then last night everyone's saying he was tired, and maybe he was. That's reasonable. But when he's playing with Derek right now, he just doesn't have the ball as much in his hands, and I'm beginning to wonder if that's actually hurting the team. And I never had that thought, but now watching it with his involvement as a player, I think he just needs the ball more when he's playing with Rose. It's actually hurting the team. Do you think that's fair?
I don't think it's necessarily that black and white. I do think that he probably does need the ball more, but I don't think it has to necessarily come at the expense of Derek, because if you look at it, Derek is not a high usage guy at this stage. Like, he scored 18 last night, but it's not like he was setting up guys with 8 or 9 assists and controlling the game in all these different ways. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he was controlling possessions in that manner, no matter what Jimmy was doing on the other side, I could say, okay, maybe it's hurting the team. But Derek is almost just taking his turn. He's picking his spots. It just so happens that he's Derek Rose, and we pay more attention to it. Now, with Jimmy last night, I think he was dead tired. You look at a guy who's playing 38 minutes a game, the most in the league. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be scaling his minutes back. It's 4-5. He just put up 50 last night. Like, you know, I know everybody likes to think these guys are superhuman, but at some times the body just gives out and it can't give you anything, and all of his shots came up short. That's the surest sign that you have no legs. So, narrative aside, I just think that Jimmy just had one of those nights where he didn't have much to give regardless of the circumstance.
Can Fred Hoiberg downshift some, at least for maybe in a week or two, a short-term kind of thing with Jimmy, given the comments that Jimmy had made earlier in the season? I know some of that's gotten ironed out, but, you know, given what's been said already, is there a way for Fred to kind of change the usage some and maybe get some legs back after a stretch like that?
Well, you have to convince Jimmy Butler that you're going to scale him back. and which is a hard task in itself because Jimmy is in a very good way. He's right. a very stubborn player. It's led him to be what he is. You know, on the flip side of that, if you're a coach and you don't have anything else in the tool shed throughout the course of the game, yeah, you go in saying we're going to play Jimmy 30 minutes tonight, and then you go 5 minutes where you don't score. Then what do? Jimmy, get off the bench. It's easy in theory to say we're going to keep him under this amount, but in application, when you're trying to win games, not trying to kill yourself winning every game, but when you're trying to win games in the abstract, you know, in reality, you're like, okay, we're going to need Brogdon to score.
4 games in 5 nights last week, 4-6 this week. Vincent, yeah. You actually get to go home to Detroit for a Monday nighter with the Pistons. I know you've got – are you headed straight to one spot that for a little dinner when you get into town?
No, I'm. My mother's birthday was a couple of days ago, so I'm going to spend some time with my parents and all of that and just, you know, see a few friends, watch the football playoffs and all of that and, you know, just do things that I would normally do when I go home, except it's under the context of watching the Bulls and Pistons go at it and realizing it's not 1990.
You still have an Isaiah Thomas poster up in your room?
No, only because when I left for college, they basically scrubbed any memory of my presence being in my parents' house. They basically called me Tom Thibodeau. I didn't exist.
That's messed up in the Goodwill household. Golden State and the Cavs this week for the Bulls. It'll be easy. No problem.
Yeah, there you go. Vincent, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your time at home, man. Sports writers aren't superhuman either. You guys need your rest, so get some, all right?
Damn straight, man. I appreciate it, guys.
You got it. Vincent Goodwill, CSN Chicago and CSNChicago.com. You heard the man. I mean, 4-5 nights and 4-6 this week. Golden State, Detroit. Who else? The Cavs.
I mean, he laid out a pretty bleak picture of Bulls about the Bulls getting any return for any of their players, which it's hard to argue with.
The best case scenario, I guess, in the short term, and I suppose in the long term, is just to press ahead, I guess. I mean, they've kind of put themselves in a situation, I thought Vincent did a really good job explaining it, of saying, you know, with the change in coach, that all this was fine. All we needed to do was change this one thing. Granted, it's a big thing, but it's just this one thing. Everything else is fine. And now it's kind of falling apart a little bit. It's kind of, or at least it's being, that theory is being tested in an incredibly, incredibly real way.
Well, they'll point out that Mike Dunleavy's been off the court all season long, and the team's a lot better with Dunleavy. And now Joakim's going to be out, and that's hurt the team. And there's a lot of reasons why it all hasn't come together. I don't think upper management say, well, you know, it's not just the roster. There's a lot of other extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from there. We'll switch it up a little bit. 4 o'clock, we've got the conversation about football moving to L.A. Also, some news from Cubs Convention. Well, I shouldn't say from Cubs Convention itself, but just prior to the convention. A little bit of news on the best pitcher on the planet. It's coming up just after the 4 o'clock news. He's Carm. I'm Connor. 720 WGN.
Arbitration's arbitration. It makes for some awkward moments, but there's sort of an art to the process, and usually the filing numbers are not offers. They're filing numbers meant to create either a hearing, which we hope to avoid and I've always avoided throughout my career, or more likely a settlement, and I think these numbers provide a lot of room for settlement. We're big fans of Jake. We think he had, you know, historic season. We think he's been an incredible performer. We understand his importance and what he's accomplished, and we hope to reward him with a contract that he deserves.
That's Cubs president Theo Epstein talking about the distance between Jake Arrieta and the Cubs right now. That distance is all, well, I guess monetary, to put it real simply. It's all just about the dollars and cents. $13 million is what the Scott Boras and Jake Arrieta camp filed for in arbitration. When you hear Theo talking about what numbers were filed, Cubs filed at what, 7-5, I believe is what the number was, 7-5,
right.
Meaning 5.5 is the distance that you are apart.
Somehow, some way, I think that Theo and Scott Boras and Jake Arrieta and Clark the Cub, they'll all sit down and work this out, and Jake will get himself somewhere in that $10-11 million range. and everything will be hunky-dory again with Jake and the Cubs.
I think so. I mean, you stand to come close to tripling your pay from last season to this if you're Jake.
Not bad.
I mean, you could easily get up to $12 million. I mean, that I could absolutely see that happening. Baseball salaries are
crazy.
They are. They just are crazy. So, I mean, and they're all of them crazy. So I don't know if that makes them, you know, normal anymore. I think it kind of does. I think we're dealing with that now. And I think baseball fans are kind of slowly coming to terms with the fact that, yes, these guys are paying or getting paid exorbitant amounts of money. And no, that doesn't affect your ability to go to the game. It's all about the cable dollars and it's all about the television deals. And ticket prices are ticket prices because we keep on paying them, not because guys are getting paid more. So, I mean, once you've kind of understood how that works and how that math works, you look at this Jake Arrieta thing. I don't know that if you ever thought that Jake was going to get a long-term extension. I kind of had held out some sort of weird, twisted hope that maybe that would happen for Jake and for that ball club. It was never going to. I mean, you've got Scott Boras on that side. You were never going to sign an extension to buy out a couple of free agent years with Jake Arrieta.
Well, I think the reality is that the Cubs would like to do it, and I think that Arrieta wants to stay here. He said many times that his family is extremely happy in Chicago, and obviously his best years as a Major League Baseball player are here, and he's a part of a team that seems primed to, you know, be in contention for the next however many years. But there's two sides of it. Number one, he's going to get a ton of dough. And the other part of his, I mean, let's be realistic here. Yeah, he was good in 2014, but he wasn't what he was in 2015.
No.
And if you're the Cubs and you're going to give him that type of dough, I think you want to see it again, or at least see half of it again. To lump down $25 to $30 million a year for this guy right now, when he's had shoulder issues, when he's had elbow issues, not major, but they have been there, and by his own admission, he finished the year basically on empty. He didn't have that extra, not on empty, but he didn't have that extra little boost that because he leaped to 230 innings, and nobody keeps himself in better shape than him. But I think the Cubs want to see it again before they say, hey, okay. I think they want to see that he bounces back from this healthy, and hopefully he will. And then I think we can start talking about an extension at some point.
I'm looking through the jump in innings is kind of where you started to strike a chord for me here. I mean, 156 and two-thirds in 2014. And then in 2015, he threw 229 innings in the regular season with another 19 innings, call it 20 innings in the postseason. So you're up and around, you know, 250 innings at that point.
He was gassed after the Pittsburgh game. He's admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even see it and you were there, Connor.
I was.
In the sixth inning of the Cubs' victory over the Pirates, I believe they were up 4-0.
Yeah, and then the walks started coming for him.
The walks started coming, and the Pirates hit bullets.
Yeah.
All over the place, except they weren't all over the place. They were directly at Addison Russell.
There was a shot right at, there was a shot at Addie Russell, and then there was a shot to Chris Bryant, too, that he juggled and barely hung on to, but ended up hanging on to it.
And then there was another one at Addison. He booted the first one, and then they were hitting him.
Came right back and turned that double play.
Right. It was a little hairy there. They got out of it because that's how baseball is. You know, sometimes balls are hit right at people. But it was pretty clear watching him in that game that he was starting to tire. And then in the, you know, against St. Louis, he wasn't the same. And then the Mets, it was ugly.
Theo also talked about his own contract. He talked about the DH coming to the National League, kind of pontificated about that a little bit with Bruce Miles of the Daily Herald. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Just after a quick break here, Travis Rogers, who is out in L.A. for Yahoo Sports Radio, going to join us and talk about the move of the Rams and probably the Chargers to L.A. Is any sports fan in L.A. aware that this is happening? I'd like to know. I want to know if they care that football's coming back to this town and how it's been ramped up. We'll talk to him just on the other side. You can watch an Original Six matchup in primetime as Patrick Kane take on the high-flying Montreal Canadiens. It's Blackhawks, Canadiens, Sunday at 6 on WGN-TV. Right back with more here on 720 WGN.
The NFL owners tonight approved the return of the Los Angeles Rams to the market, starting with the 2016 season, project that we think is going to change, frankly, not just NFL stadiums and NFL complexes, but I think sports complexes around the world. I think this is going to be one of the greatest complexes in the world.
That's the commish, Roger Goodell, talking about the Rams moving back to L.A. I think very shortly you're going to find out that the Chargers are headed there to join them, too. Figured we get a kind of a look at the L.A. perspective of this with our guy Travis Rogers, 710 out there, Yahoo Sports Radio as well. Hey, Travis, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, sure, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Let's back it up 6 weeks or even 6 months if you wanted to. I think for a while now, you've kind of known that Stan Kroenke and the Rams weren't really happy with St. Louis, or at least Stan wasn't. And it was more and more likely as the season went on that a team was going to move. And I think the L.A. marketplace had been, you know, tagged for an NFL franchise for some time now. Has there been, you know, anticipation about this, excitement about this, or is it all just kind of been, we'll believe it when we see it?
I think it's the last thing. I think it was more cautious optimism, maybe a little bit of apprehension thrown in there, because LA's been without football for 21 years, and we've heard stories about this team or that team coming back for a very long time, and they've gotten close at times and less close at others, but it never really felt like there was any tangible plan in place to get it done. It was more used as a poker chip to threaten the city that a team was in, that, hey, if you don't give us what we want, we'll go to LA. And most of the people here kind of got used to that and didn't really expect it to happen, but once this deal came together, it made too much sense, because Stan Kroenke bought the land in L.A., so he had a place to build a stadium. He was willing to pay for it, so you didn't have to get it through a city council or a vote or anything like that. The Rams are the natural team to come back here, so this was the first time that I think people really looked at it and said, oh, okay, this might be for real. The Charger thing, they've been threatening that for 10 years, and it never felt like it was real. This was the first time it was real, but right up until the last hour, I think everybody was a little bit skeptical that it was going to happen at all, because it's been such a long time.
Travis, what's your understanding? Because Kroenke was trying to extract as much dough as possible out of St. Louis, for the Rams to stay there. But yet, as you just mentioned, he went to L.A. with no public funding whatsoever. I mean, how does that jive? You would think that he would be trying to get something out of California, but it just sounds like he just wanted to go back to L.A., period.
I think that these are guys that are really good at math, and if there wasn't a way for him to make more money in L.A. than there was at St. Louis, then he wouldn't come. Now, maybe that money's not going to come directly from a government or taxpayers or whatever it is, but, you take it out of St. Louis and drop it in L.A., and he goes from a bottom five team with a total value to a team that's probably, if it's not number one, it's probably in the top five for sure. Just moving it from there to here makes his team that much more valuable. I think that's a big part of it. If he can get the Chargers to sign up as a tenant, then all of a sudden that's another revenue stream for the guy. I don't know how he's going to pull the money out, but I don't doubt that he will.
Travis, what do you know about the voting process and how things kind of transpired there? I followed as closely as I could and still didn't understand the damn thing. I mean, it was just it was kind of insane. I mean, all of a sudden some ballots went secret and then things passed. You had some anonymous voting going on. And I think at one time you had a couple of things on the ballot. Roger Goodell put something completely different on the table, and all of a sudden you were voting about that. I mean, these guys, these barons of football, get to change the rules whenever they feel like it, as the rules are kind of being, set and stricken at the same time. It was a crazy process.
I think a couple of things. Number one, I think you're right. I think it's a good demonstration of just how feckless Roger Goodell can be and how ineffective he is, that he's the guy that they run out there in front of the cameras when it's time to do a TV shot, that they're the ones making all the decisions. He works for them, not the other way around. And the other thing that was pretty widely reported, at least out here, was that Jerry Jones basically got all these guys in a room and said, hey, look, this plan right here is the one that's going to make all of us even richer. What do you say we sign off on this one? Yeah. And they all got together and said, okay, and Jerry's probably right. He was the one that said, look, the Rams in Inglewood make the most sense. If the Chargers want to come along, fine, we'll let them come along. But this plan makes everybody that much more rich. Let's go do that.
Along the lines of making everybody more rich, I mean, the NFL is giving $100 million to both the Raiders and the Chargers to enhance their stadiums in Oakland and in San Diego. Does it seem to you like it seems to me, Travis, that Roger Goodell and company, they want those teams to stay right where they're at?
The Raiders, I would assume, will go back to Oakland. I don't think that there's any chance in hell that they end up in San Antonio, which I read about the other day. There's right. No way that the Texans and the Cowboys are going to let them come in and close in on any of their potential customers. I think they go back to Oakland. The Chargers are the ones that I think are the most interesting, because they have three options, basically. The first option is they can go and be partners with Stan Kroenke in this project. If I'm Stan Kroenke, I don't know if I want a partner. I'd rather be the guy calling the shots.
Yeah.
Number two is they can go be a tenant of Stan Kroenke's and, you know, go ask the Clippers and go ask these other teams that are tenants in another team's building. You're immediately assigned second-class citizenry. And then you got to come to Los Angeles, where the Rams not only were here first in the sense that they've been here 5 days, but they've got 50 years of history on you in this city, too, and a lot of people remember the Rams. Or you got to go back to San Diego, which isn't the worst option in the world. San Diego's a pretty fantastic place, but you're going back with your tail between your legs, and you basically fouled your relationship with the local people in San Diego. To me, they're going to get all the money, but the relationship that they're going to have with wherever they end up is going to be peculiar at best.
I'm kind of fascinated by the process of a franchise or a city like this that hasn't had a franchise in some time, kind of being reinvigorated by a franchise. I mean, I don't know where you guys are in the process of like, oh, hey, we've got an NFL team again, or boy, the Rams are back and this is fun. Like, when does it turn from, hey, this is great and it was a process to get it here and they'll play in the Coliseum for a couple of years, to boy, they better get Todd Gurley a quarterback, otherwise this whole thing really doesn't matter. You know, where on the transition are we?
Well, it's funny. It went from, all right, we got a team, the Rams are back, this is great, let's have a pep rally, to when's Kobe going to play again? The Lakers suck, and does D'Angelo Russell have a chance to play in the NBA?
Sure.
This is a Laker town, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. So the football thing was great for a day. I think that they will have fans. I think the people will be excited. But this is not a place that's going to live and breathe what you just described. The stereotype of the I don't give a damn Los Angeles sports fan is exceedingly accurate. It's very, very true that we're when you're good, look, if the Rams show up and win 12 games next year, we're into it. If they show up and win four next year, let me know when you get good again and I'll come. That's kind of how we roll out here. I think everybody's more or less comfortable with that. The only team that people kind of ride and die with here are the Lakers. That's about it. So the Rams have a little bit of a hill to climb.
But the fans did want the Rams, though. That's correct. I mean, that was their team. Hey, if we could have the Chargers, the Raiders, or the Rams, it was overwhelming. We want our Rams back.
I think yes, for the most part. But it's interesting because what you just described applies to me. I wanted the Rams to come back. When I was 12 years old, I was a Rams fan. When I was, you know, went to college and, you know, you kind of learn how to run your mouth at other people, I was running my mouth about the Rams. I liked the Rams. And my dad was a Rams guy and all these things. But I have three kids, and they've never known L.A. with the Rams. They're not their Rams coming back. They're the Rams that were in St. Louis. They have no idea that the Rams are even ever here, really. I did a batting cage with my youngest son this morning at a little baseball practice, and all the boys were buzzing about, like, hey, did you hear that the Rams are leaving St. Louis? It wasn't that they're coming back to L.A.
Wow.
It's that they had left St. Louis. So, you know, for a generation, it's 20. You know, if you're 30 or under, you really don't remember football in Los Angeles. So if you're over that 30 threshold, you remember the Rams. But for a whole generation, if not two generations of people, the Rams were never here to begin with. It's only for people maybe 45 and up that are really plugged into the history of the Rams here.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the stereotype of the L.A. sports fan, too, and it's so easy to just like, oh, that's what it is, and I'm sure, and all that kind of thing. It's weird to hear that it's completely as, well, I guess as accurate as you make it out to be. I guess what's interesting there is, you know, you've got a team in the Dodgers who have put themselves in a position to be the best in the National League. You've got you have the Lakers doing whatever the hell that they're doing. You've got an NFL franchise back. Could it happen anywhere else in the country that a team as good as the Dodgers and as historic as the Dodgers can't be seen by its own fans on television in its own market? I mean, it's insane.
That's the right word for it. It is indescribable that is happening. And I think we may see something very unique in Los Angeles, and that is where people start to care, because Vin Scully's last season is this upcoming season, and he's an 88-year-old man who's been with this team for 1,000 years, and no one has known baseball in Los Angeles without Vin Scully.
Right.
And if his last three seasons of calling Dodger games can only be seen by about a quarter of the people in the market, I think you're going to start to hear noise, because I still believe that people think, oh, they're going to get it figured out. They're going to get it figured out. Well, we're entering into the third season, and you're right. It is insane that a team like the Dodgers, this isn't an expansion team that came up. This isn't a team that doesn't have deep roots. This is the Dodgers in Los Angeles, and if people can't see them, it's ridiculous. But again, it speaks to what you're talking about. This whole thing here it's out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. And if they're not on, the Angels are. The Mike Trout's on the Angels. That's kind of cool. If not, I can turn on the Kings or the Ducks, or I can watch the Clippers or the Lakers or SC or UCLA. There are just so many different things to grab your attention. And if it's not on, people will care for a bit, and then they're going to move on to the next thing.
Right, and let's be real. Baseball's boring, except for a very lot of us that can enjoy a 162 baseball schedule, including the guy to my left here, Connor.
I'll watch the whole damn thing.
He goes to sleep to Vin Scully.
I do. Vin talks me to sleep every night.
Travis, I got one question for you, because you're a very intelligent man. I've followed your work, and Mike Jacobson speaks about you every night.
Very highly.
And,
don't believe a word Mike says. He's full of you-know-what.
We usually do.
As far as I can throw him.
Well, and we concur, but here's my question, because St. Louis, okay, they were going to bend over backwards and basically like lose public schools to keep the Rams, but that was going to happen. And you know, you talked about you're going back to San Diego with your tail between your legs, and I think you know fans have a very short memory. You're back, and okay, great.
Yeah.
I think they'll find a way. But the money, when you look at what's going on in this country and in states and everything, there's no money for this. If you got a super rich guy who can buy a bunch of land in Inglewood, okay, fine. But as far as all the other teams around that are looking for public funding for new stadiums so they can be like Stan Kroenke or Jerry's World, it's just not there. I'm curious where you think this is going.
It's a really good question, and I would love to think that the citizenry is going to wake up one day and say, hold on a second, what do I get out of that stadium? How many times am I going to go there, and how much of my tax money is going to go there to build that thing? I don't want that. I want the school that you described. I want something that a park in my neighborhood that my kids can go to. I don't care about this. And that guy can build it himself. And look, these guys will build it themselves if they're absolutely forced to do it. The problem is nobody forces them to do it. I think when we get to that point, they will, or at least it'll be a little bit more of a compromise. But as long as municipalities keep ponying up, they're going to keep their hands in their pockets. They're not going to spend their own money until somebody makes them.
Yeah, that's definitely the way it works. Travis, appreciate you coming on, the insight and the info, my man. We'll get you on again soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Travis Rogers, 710 in LA, and Yahoo Sports Radio as well. You follow him on Twitter at Travis Rogers. It's Rogers with the DG, not just the G.
Yeah, when I worked with Travis at Yahoo, he had a really big job, and I was the afternoon host. And I love Travis, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but I figured you'd want to know that.
I did. I
just wanted to get it out there that at one time we both worked on the same national network.
The world. I don't even know what it is. You're crying a little bit. The tears are real.
It's an emotional day every which way for me, and no one else around here but for me.
Don't get the tears on the electronics, okay? The world famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNRadio.com. This year, Chicago's captured in black and white. It's presented special in a one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2Ks calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars. It's the first year that it's all black and white, though. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that'll change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that's completely 100% original. Go to WGNRadio.com and scroll down to the feature section. Make a purchase of our calendar and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2Ks calendar, available in the feature section at WGNRadio.com.
Going to talk to Ben Fredrickson from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and also co-host down there at Radio 920 in St. Louis. Get the St. Louis angle on this. I'm not kidding about the public schools down there. I mean, it was unbelievable what they were going to do to their social services to try to keep the Rams. We'll talk about that next. And we got the 4:30 news with Rob, 720 WGN.
It is a difficult process, and as Roger said, it is bittersweet. We understand the emotions involved of our fans, and it's not easy to do these things. They are purposefully made hard. What I would say is I understand the emotional side. I have a responsibility also to take care of the organization and a responsibility to my 31 other partners to have a first-class facility because it's where they play, too.
We're getting real heartbroken over here about Stan Kroenke. Oh, those 31 other millionaires and billionaires. They just don't have... You know what? The bathrooms weren't nice enough in St. Louis at the owner's box. They had to move the damn thing. Welcome back to the Beat, 312-981-7200. We head out to the phone lines now, and it's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Dispatch and co-host at Radio 920 in St. Louis. Hey, Ben, how you doing? There it is. I pressed the right button.
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fantastic. Let's get it started with this. There are a lot of loose ends, or at least it seems from the outside looking in, a lot of loose ends still for the Rams and the city of St. Louis and Rams fans. Can you kind of walk us through exactly what's left to do in the exit with the Rams here and what fans are kind of going through and what public officials are kind of going through as well?
Sure. I mean, yeah, it's all pretty much done. I mean, there's going to be probably some legal action that I would think will be more with the goal of recovering some funds or some damages of some kind. But no one is expecting that the move will be blocked. I mean, that's done with. The kind of the Reader's Digest version of this story for people who maybe weren't following it as closely. Obviously, if you're not in St. Louis, you're probably weren't as familiar with it until it kind of became, you know, really clear that the Rams were going to file for relocation and try to go back to Los Angeles. And to sum that up, I guess as quickly as possible is that Stan Kroenke was a minority owner of the team who bought in as a minority owner when the team moved to St. Louis. He is one of the richest owners in the league. He's a billionaire who is from Missouri, who went to the University of Missouri, and he spoke at length in 2010 when he increased his stock in the team from minority to the majority owner, that his plan was to keep the team in Missouri. He was not planning on leading the charge, as he said, back to Los Angeles, and that he was from Missouri and had always fought for professional football in Missouri, and that was not his intention. Well, when the Rams moved from Los Angeles to St. Louis, they got a really sweet deal on the lease that they had, and that lease included an unrealistic clause that said that the venue they played in would be kept in the top 25% of the league. I think at the time that was agreed upon. People asked questions about it, but not loudly enough. I think the idea was that the owner would hopefully work in good faith with the city and the county and the state to provide them renovations that maybe did not meet those standards. But, you know, if the team was winning and people were supportive and everything would be taken care of was kind of the plan. Well, that's not what happened. the Rams ended up going to the arbitration, and they, you know, according to the letter of the law and the lease, they had the right to relocate when those renovations and upgrades weren't made. And once that took place, Stan Kroenke just set full sail to Los Angeles. What we saw was the ultimate culmination of that.
So, and let's just, to be clear about Stan and his money, it's not really his money, right? He married into the money. His wife has the dough. Walmart, whole deal.
He married into the Walmart empire. Now, he's a savvy businessman, a real estate guy, but there's a lot of help there as well. And I think that's part of I don't know him personally. He does not have any relationships with the media here anymore. The last time he had talked to the media here was in 2012 when he hired Jeff Fisher. So that was the last time we talked to him or heard him talk, period, until he made his public comments at the press conference the NFL had in Houston.
Sounds like a personal
guy. He's great. The only other comment that he made was the Rams relocation application, which was basically 29 pages of the Rams ripping the city. Now, we knew that the Rams were going to say that, you know, according to their lease, they had the right to leave, and they did. That's true. And we knew that they were going to say that the stadium that he's proposing in Inglewood is the best for the NFL, which maybe it is. And we knew that he was going to, you know, propose that it would be better for the Rams in Los Angeles, which we'll see. But one of the things that really ticked people here off was they went over that. They said St. Louis was a two-sport town that can't support an NFL team. They said that fans basically were disrespecting the franchise by not buying tickets and not showing up for games when they have not had a winning record or a playoff appearance since Kroenke became the majority owner. Jeff Fisher is one of the most stunning coaches in the league when it comes to his job security. This season he'll become just the third. When he starts the season, he'll just become the third since the AFL-NFL merger to get a fifth season after not having a winning season in each of his first four, which is just ungodly. I mean, there have been multiple coaches who have been fired twice since he's had his job without taking the Rams to the playoffs. So that's, you know, they basically put a mediocre to bad product on the field and then rip the fans not coming out because they spend to the cap every year, which is heinous. And then they said some other things about how any NFL franchise would be, you know, headed toward financial ruin, that agreed to the St. Louis Stadium project. And then that's kind of this whole other this whole other issue with this is St. Louis did more to keep its team than Oakland or San Diego.
Yep.
They came up with a task force, and it was too late because Kroenke had already made up his mind. But the task force plan was legitimate. They came up with a plan to build a $1.1 billion stadium on the riverfront here in St. Louis that had $400 million of public money. In the league, and the Rams turn their nose up at it, which is frustrating and probably sets a scary precedent for the league because a lot of stadiums are going to need to be renovated at some point. If other cities are smart, they'll look at that and say, why would we promise you public money when it doesn't even make a difference?
Yeah, we were just having that question, and that's what I wanted to get to here, Ben. I mean, the city of St. Louis, they went to court and got a ruling that voided the law calling for voters to have a say in the granting of public subsidies. I mean, think about that. They went to court. You used to have a say, people of this city, but yeah, now you don't because we want to keep the Rams. And that, of course, infuriated taxpayers. The county, rather than calling for a vote, you had the governor, Jay Nixon, a Democrat. He goes and gets a task force to save the Rams. The city had put up $70 million, then agreed to put up $150 million, and they had a game day tax that was supposed to go back to the team. Instead, they were going to give $100 million of that to the Rams, to the stadium. I mean, the point being, St. Louis did everything they possibly could at over the top to keep them. And really, yeah, Stuff they shouldn't have done. Just to keep the football team.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. And there's legitimate discourse about, you know, should that have been done? And that's a valid argument. I mean, I love covering the NFL. I have a hard time asking people not to get a say in whether or not they're going to support, you know, money going to an owner who doesn't want to be here anyway. And so that's a valid criticism. And then you look at, you know, on top of that, just the shortcuts that were taken in order to present a viable plan. And the best part about it, one of the best, not best, but most hilarious parts about it in hindsight was that one of the NFL owners, at least one of the NFL owners, told this task force that they would receive, that it was realistic for them to request an additional $100 million from the NFL for its stadium effort. So the NFL gives $200 million to a city that's wanting to build a stadium through their loan process.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can give you up to an additional $200 million. So the task force requested an additional $100 million on top of that, which was promised to them by someone. I mean, they wouldn't just come up with that number out of thin air, right? This was told to them by one of the owners they were working with on the committee. And then Roger Goodell came out when it became very clear that the league was not interested in having St. Louis keep an NFL team. Roger Goodell came out and smashed that theory twice, once before a critical Board of Aldermen vote here in St. Louis, and then again in the memo that he sent to the league before the owners' meet. And this before that, even Eric Grubman came on a radio program, Bernie Miklos' show here in St. Louis, and basically tried to sabotage a vote as well. So it was very clear, looking back, you know, what the league wanted here. But then the best part about it was now San Diego and Oakland, which did less to keep their teams, and I'm not bashing on their cities at all, but it's true. You look at the plans presented, they both did less than St. Louis to keep their teams. They're going to get $100 million
right.
In the league. To try again, which is just comical when you look at, you know, why would any city, after seeing what St. Louis just went through, you know, make any concessions to this league that is run by billionaires? It's not going to do, you know, what the city wants. It's not going to. It's basically the cities are lucky to be chosen. Is kind of where we're at right now.
So, Ben, talking with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post Dispatch and Radio 920 in St. Louis. I was reading in the Post Dispatch that Claire McCaskill, the Missouri senator, is, I guess, putting together legislation or getting ready to put together legislation that would require professional franchises that leave town early to refund the public. What do you know about? Can you give us the thumbnail version on that kind of legislation? Because I'm pretty sure that sports fans everywhere who like watching the stuff but not necessarily having to pay for it if they're not going to the game themselves, I would imagine a lot of people are interested in this.
Yeah, I think, and this is just one of the kind of legal things that could shake out of this, is a lot of politicians and leaders here in St. Louis are upset and have basically came out really pretty strongly and sworn off the NFL and said that, you know, we don't want an NFL city anymore. We're not gonna, you know, we're gonna find better ways to invest. There's also a group of fans that is, I don't know enough about the legalese of whether or not this can succeed, but there's a group of fans led by a lawyer who's suing the Rams for basically making false promises to its client base. They're kind of citing false advertising.
Hmm.
And they said they were not going to leave. They said they were going to be here. They encouraged people to buy tickets, you know, and do merchandise and these kind of things. It's now useless because the team's gone. So there's all kinds of legal and political ramifications that could come from this. And now you have, you know, it's unfortunate for these people who tried to keep the Rams. The task force spent $16 million, you know, coming up with ways to try to keep this football team, and now it didn't happen. Well, what happens to that $16 million? I mean, that's just gone.
Poof.
So, and the NFL's not. I don't think the NFL's planning on paying it back. So will there be some way to try to get that one back? That's another you know, question that's yet to be answered. So in terms of the fallout, it's going to bring up a lot of really interesting questions about how cities interact with the league, but it won't do anything for people who just miss the football team at all. They're gone. They've already been introduced in L.A., and they're not coming back.
Yeah, no, they're not, and I guess Rams fans are going to have to figure out some way to watch another squad come NFL Sundays if they're still so inclined. Ben, appreciate you hopping on. Appreciate the perspective, my man. Talk to you soon.
Hey. Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. You guys have a good weekend.
Absolutely. Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can hear him too, 920 in St. Louis. I've listened to a lot of, and I've read a lot of Rams fans, you know, kind of swearing off the NFL and, you know, we're done with this whole thing. And I would imagine there are a lot of LA Rams fans that said the same thing. I know that there are a lot of Cleveland Browns fans that swore off the NFL when the Browns left. I'm sure there are Baltimore fans that when the Colts left, swore off the NFL then. You know what they've almost all done?
Come back?
99.9% of them have done? Absolutely, they've come right back. Absolutely, they came back. They swore off this thing, and like an addict who can't put it down, they come right back to this league. And that's why, for whatever reason you do that, whether it's because you're entertained or because you're bored or you really like football or your kids end up liking it, whatever it is, whatever the reasons that bring you back to this game, the reasons that have brought you back, the fact that you keep coming back is the reason that owners like this get money for their public stadiums.
Right. It'd be interesting, or I'm hopeful, I guess I should say, that at some point, cities, fans, states will realize the power that they have and realize what they're dealing with. You do not have to go into taxpayer dough to keep these, to have a team come to you. Look at exactly what happened with the Rams. They went on their own dime. Look what happened here. The Chicago Cubs are paying for the renovations at Wrigley Field with their own money.
Yeah, but that wasn't the first thing they tried to do. I mean, they tried to get public money.
Right.
They told Governor Quinn that we'd love to have some money just before he got booted out of office.
Right, and they didn't get it.
No, and they were never going to get it.
And good. They shouldn't have gotten it. Yeah. Tom Ricketts has got plenty of dough over there, and they're doing it. You know who did get money around here? The DePaul Blue Demons have a stadium going up. Why? No one knows. I mean, really. No disrespect to DePaul. They shouldn't play. Northwestern shouldn't get a free stadium either, who's on the station later today with Penn State. It's ridiculous. Forget about what's, you know.
That DePaul thing is like number 50 on reasons like Rahm is worried about things right now, though. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah, no, that's...
He ran that thing right through. Oh, you're going to enjoy this one, and nobody cares
anymore.
We need
anymore. A 12,000...
He's got so many things on top of that list.
I mean, that's what we should have known. What are you doing? A 12,000-seat or whatever it is stadium for DePaul?
Uh-huh.
Who haven't been relevant since 1983?
You're going to drag them in. Drag them in by the 10,000s.
I mean, for what reason was that? Oh, we're going to get the Final Four here. No, we're not. It's a 12,000-seat stadium.
I'm actually pretty interested in Claire McCaskill, Senator McCaskill's legislation. I don't know if it can get teeth. Maybe that's a conversation we can have at some point down the line. But if it does grow the ability to affect some of the larger bill franchises, some of the, like the NFL, I wonder how that changes how you do business, how the NFL has to do business.
I would hope that, you know, people make some hard decisions. We got a lot of issues as far as finances in this country. It should be going to the NFL. By the way, on the court, a little bit of fun. Notre Dame goes into Cameron Indoor today.
No kidding.
And beats Duke 95-91. The number 9 Blue Devils have lost 2 in a row. And Notre Dame with a borderline shocking win on the road today. Congratulations to the Fighting Irish.
Wow, interesting. Let's see. The Chiefs and Pats are going on as well. Chiefs just punched one in. Tom Brady with a, I believe it was a rushing touchdown. I thought I saw the old quarterback sneak go around. And then Rob Gronkowski has 4 catches, 47 yards, and one score. He has been thrown to four times, so things going pretty well for Gronk. Pats lead it 14-3. Step away for a quick break, and then we'll get back to it. Chris Hine going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk about those red-hot Blackhawks and a travesty, an absolute travesty in the NHL. We'll get to that in just a second. 720 WGN. So just got done talking about a city that's losing a franchise and to another guy who's getting a franchise in his town. Travis Rogers out in L.A. joined us in the 4 o'clock hour, and then Ben Fredrickson. Travis is getting a team that he used to root for in the Rams. Ben is losing a team that I think people kind of cared about in St. Louis. Well, at least they put together the highest effort they could to, or the highest effort of any of those three cities, like, you know, Oakland or San Diego. To keep their team, and now we move on to a team that just can't help but keep, you know, jumping over the bar, and they set the bar higher and higher throughout the course of the season. They just keep on clearing the damn thing. They've won 11 straight now, have the Blackhawks, and just keep pounding things away. I mean, Patrick Kane with his first hat trick in the NHL.
His first regular season hat trick.
In the regular season, you're right.
You, of course, remember May 11, 2009.
Really?
Game 6, the Western Conference semis in a 7-5 Blackhawk victory over Vancouver?
Yes. You remember it well.
You're so good.
Vancouver couldn't even find him.
Can you remember
they were looking for him, and they couldn't find him on the ice.
Can you remember his second hat trick? Can you pull that one out of the Connor McKnight incredible Blackhawks knowledge hat?
Was it against the Predators?
Not a Predator. It was in a Western Conference final, June 8th of 2013, Game 5 versus the Kings. Yeah, the game winner. Game winner in the second overtime.
Sure.
The guy's unbelievable, man. I mean, and then you get another goal and assist from the bread man.
Panarin's playing well. I think things have worked out with him. You know, Rokan had Stan Bowman on just the other day. What was it? Tuesday, I think. And we talked a lot about Panarin with him. It was an interesting conversation about what the risks were and what they knew he could do. We'll talk about it a little bit. Chris Hine of the Chicago Tribune going to join us and talk a little Blackhawks on the other side of the 5 o'clock news. I do have to tell you, the Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients. As a full-service clinic, the Eye Institute provides comprehensive eye exams, glasses and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and emergency eye care, all at an affordable price. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare.
Rob Hart's got the news. Chris Hine has your Blackhawks report coming up right after that, right here on 720 WGN.
Welcome back, 5:10 here on 720 WGN. You've got the beat. I want to talk a little Blackhawks here with our guy, Chris Hine of the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter, at Christopher Hine. They say in writing, write what you know. That's what you get taught early on as a young aspiring writer. Myself, I was told write what you know. The problem is I didn't know anything, so that left me very few things to write about. Guys who do it well, women who do it well, write what they know. And for the most part, for Chris Hine, that's writing about Blackhawks hockey. But if you go to the Tribune, you go to the website, and you click on Christopher Hine's, you know, portrait, his profile, that kind of stuff, it lists all the recent articles. Now, if you scroll back far enough, on December 30th, Christopher Hine wrote a review of Beautiful, the Carole King musical. We've talked, Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on again. Really appreciate it. We are, and I mean this, I'm only slightly joking around because it is actually pretty damned interesting. We're actually pretty pumped that you got to write something that you love that much when your job is to write about hockey, which is something that everybody, you know, would die to go do. Every hockey fan would be like, oh, I'd love Christopher Hine's job. And you're sitting there going, you know what would be great this week? It's if I could write myself a little, you know, 15,000-word write-up on Beautiful, the Carole King musical, how did that conversation happen with you and the editor, and who did you lie to get this written?
First of all, I wish I could have written 15,000 words. Unfortunately, I had to keep it down to about 1,000 words or so. I could have gone 15,000. you know, if anybody wants to hire me on the side to write a 15,000 piece about Carole King, I would love to. But no,
unfortunately, Grantland is gone. But that would be your spot.
That would have been the spot to do it. Honestly, all I did was I emailed our entertainment editor at the Tribune, a guy by the name of Scott Powers, and you know, I knew Scott a little bit when I used to work on the desk, and he knew I was a big fan of Carole King, and you know, when the musical was coming to town, I basically said, "Hey, if you're interested, I could, you know, drum up something for you if you want," and he was all about it, and so. You know, I had a couple of days off in November, so I wrote the piece, and they held it until you know, people could see the show for a few weeks here in Chicago, and then I think it ran on New Year's Eve. So that piece was in the can for about a month, and I was kind of waiting until they put it in the paper.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
And it's kind of off the beaten path. There was also amazing when Casey Johnson out of nowhere just wrote a Ben Gordon tribute piece this week. I like what's going on over at the Tribune. Just random things that writers want to write about. You got Carole King. He got Ben Gordon. On to the Blackhawks real fast here, or actually longer than. So they're in first place out of nowhere, really. 10 in a row, and you're on top of the Stars. Best record in the Western Conference. Back-to-back seems realistic at this point. I mean, who gets the most credit, I guess, for being where they're at right now? There's a question.
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, I think first and foremost, it starts with the MVP candidate on the team, Patrick Kane. You know, the guy's having a magnificent season. He's only 3 goals away from his career high in goals. Had his first ever regular season hat trick the other night, which I think everybody was a little surprised at. You know, a lot of the Hawks in Quenneville were, after the game, were like, "Really? This is the first time he's ever had a hat trick?" It was a stat that stunned a lot of the Hawks. You know, it starts with Kane, but then there's Corey Crawford as well, who, you know, throughout the course of the season, and you could go back to even as recently as Thursday night, Crawford has been spectacular, and there have been a number of nights where Crawford has won them games flat out. You know, you can go back to a pair of 1-0 shutouts they had earlier in the season, back-to-back. You know, Crawford has – I still think he's on 6 shutouts, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, he's been magnificent of late. Like I said, Thursday night, allowing 1 goal to the Canadiens on the road in his hometown. It was quite the performance, and you know, I think it starts with those two guys, but you know, everybody else picked it up of late. Duncan Keith came back from his injury, and he's healthy. Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa seem to be gelling well with Andrew Shaw on the top line. That line is finally getting some production where for a long time it wasn't. So everything is kind of coming together right now. They found a defensive prospect, Erik Gustafsson. Philip Deneau, the center, has done a good job replacing Marcus Kruger, and Kruger is expected back in time for the playoffs at some point. So right now, everything is kind of working for the Blackhawks. Everything is clicking right now.
Talking with Chris Hine, the Blackhawks beat writer of the Chicago Tribune. Follow him on Twitter, at Christopher Hine. You know, we were talking with, on the Rokan show on Tuesday, GM Stan Bowman stopped by, and we talked a little bit with him. One of the topics of conversation was Artemi Panarin and his, you know, kind of the scouting of him, you know, going over there and seeing him.
Right.
He was a known entity, you know, and Stan was real quick to point it out that everyone in the league kind of wanted to take this guy and see exactly what could become of a 25-year-old kid. He's 5'11", listed at 5'11" and 170. He's really kind of Patrick Kane-sized, and I think undersized was something that people wrote time and time again as far as, you know, can this game translate from the KHL to the NHL? I asked Stan what risks there were in signing him. You know, I mean, you can look at the game and kind of project out and see, okay, here's where the good sides are, here's why we're doing this. What are the risks? And everything Stan talked about was the moving from Russia. Essentially, it was just cultural stuff. It was going from that environment to here. And there was, I don't want to say terror, but there was real worry that, like, okay, this is our biggest thing. This is the biggest problem we have in taking that guy from that system over here. I wonder if that gets talked about enough.
I don't think it does. You know, we have made a big deal of the transition that Panarin has been trying to make, and I still think it's a work in progress for him. You know, he lost one of his best friends, Victor Tikhonov, when the Hawks put him on waivers and the Coyotes picked him up. You know, that I think was a little tough to take for Panarin. But as you said, the remarkable thing about it is how seamlessly he has transitioned on the ice just from a pure hockey standpoint. Everything about his game just meshes so well with the Hawks and with what the NHL is right now. You mentioned he's undersized. Well, so is Patrick Kane. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't matter in the NHL as much as it used to, because the game is more about speed and skill now than it is about big, forceful, physical contact. So he's coming along in the league at the right time. He's 24 years old. He's not exactly, you know, a young 19, 20-year-old. He's got a couple years on him now. So he is more like a veteran than I think he is a rookie at this point when it comes to playing hockey. But yeah, like you said, it was the transition to America. But having Victor Tikhonov there for a little bit, having Artem Anisimov on the same line with him, has really helped smooth that transition and I think make it work. So in that sense, the Hawks were very smart about what they were doing when they brought Panarin over. They made sure that, okay, not only is this guy going to fit well on the ice with us, but we're going to make sure that he's got resources in place and that we're going to help him to fit in off the ice in Chicago as well. And so far, everything's going pretty well.
Chris, speaking of waivers, Brian Bickell reportedly placed on him once again today. You've got a piece in the Tribune, which everybody should read about it. Bickell, you know, he was sent down earlier in the year, and he played okay at Rockford, and he's come back, but he just can't get in the rotation. And you know, Q had an opportunity to play him earlier in the week, but he went with Richard Panik instead. I mean, they could save money, I guess, if they send Bickell down and leave him there for the rest of the season. How do you see this playing out? Will anybody pick him up?
I don't think anybody's going to pick him up. Nobody wants a $4 million a year salary cap hit for a guy that, you know, through half the season right now hasn't scored a goal. So I do not expect anybody to pick him up, just like nobody picked him up earlier in the year. I don't know how it's going to play out over the long term. I just, as I said before, just kind of spitballing here, you send him down to Rockford, and you're saving $950,000 against the cap as long as he's down there. It does give you flexibility to make a move, as so long as you commit to having Bickell in Rockford the rest of the season. You can't bring him back up, or else that $950,000 is going to come back on the cap against you. So, you know, I wonder if it's a precursor to a trade, potentially. I don't know for sure right now, but he wasn't cracking the rotation the last four games. And as you said, Tuesday, when Artem Anisimov gets sick literally an hour before the game, and Quenneville looks over his options and says, yeah, Bickell, you know, you're still sitting down. I'm going to go with the new guy. That kind of tells you all you need to know right now about where Brian Bickell stands on this team.
Chris, more importantly than that, and I know it's hard to believe, but there is something more important than Brian Bickell. We had a caller just buzz in on you, and they wanted you to expound on what you thought about Aretha Franklin's version of Carole King's Natural Woman.
I thought it was fantastic. You know,
this was, by the way, at the Kennedy Center Awards.
Kennedy just Center. Oh, okay, I was going to say, where do we feed this?
Yeah,
it was I wasn't covering the Hawks that night, so I was actually able to stay home and flip away from the Hawks game for a minute to actually watch the Carole King tribute. And I had actually seen online beforehand, thanks to my Google News alert of Carole King, no lie on that, I actually saw clips of Aretha's performance beforehand, and I saw when she dropped the fur coat, and I said to myself, this thing might be pretty special, and sure enough, it was. I thought she sounded great. You know, I really had never, outside of a concert for VH1 a few years ago, I had never seen them in the same building together before, but it was just a fantastic performance. Carole was all into it. I think she was surprised to see Aretha there. It was just a great moment between two musical legends, and the President of the United States and the First Lady just happened to be there and are enjoying it too. And it was just a great musical moment, you know, something that is really hard to recreate the circumstances around that type of performance again.
That's amazing.
Chris, appreciate you coming on as always, man. Awesome to read this stuff. It's really cool when it's really cool when you get an opportunity, I would imagine, to go do something that, you know, you're not known for doing, and yet you do it as well as the thing you do on a regular basis. You know, that's pretty cool, man. Way to go.
It's an exception. Thanks. Well, you know, I have to thank our editors for kind of letting us, you mentioned, you know, the KC's piece before. Our editors, thankfully, have let us think outside the box and encourage us to think outside the box when it comes to story ideas sometimes. So, you know, all credit to them for allowing us the freedom to do some of this stuff.
Awesome, man. When you come back on next, we will have another Carole King song for you. You rest assured.
I love it.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it.
Christopher Hine of the Chicago Tribune talking a little Blackhawks here with us. This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot are cooking it up like Mama used to. Join the search for the best comfort food, Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Get you an update on the Chiefs and the Patriots coming up here, and also a very busy week for the Blackhawks. Tomorrow night, the Canadians at the United Center, 5:30 pregame right here on 720 WGN. They're at Nashville on Tuesday, Tampa Bay Thursday, Florida Friday, back at the UC next Sunday with the Blues.
There is a sham going on in the NHL. We're going to tell you about it just after this here on 720 WGN.
Surprised, shocked, kind of excited, but I kind of expected it, so it wasn't that shocking. It was just one of those things where at first I thought it was a joke and this and that, but now it happened and kind of got to go with it and have some fun with it and just try to do my best with it. It is. It's kind of nice. I've grinded out a career here. It's not easy being the odd man out a lot, the odd man in. You never know where you stand. You never know if you're going to play or not, get sent down, you're forward or defense. It's kind of one of those things where it's a grind. And just to get a little recognition, it's fun, and I hope all the guys who have been in my position kind of take a little grasp of this and say, hey, you know, we did something.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play. Hey now, you're a rock star.
So that's John Scott, former Blackhawk, a lover and a fighter. Really nice dude, John Scott. I had the chance to interact with him, talk with him a couple of times during his tenure here with the Hawks, and couldn't really have found a nicer guy. He's one of the guys who talked about, you know, being, you know, that kind of anxious nervousness, knowing that you're going to be in a game, you know, tomorrow night, and your job is to go fight somebody. You know, he's talked about that before. He's a 33-year-old journeyman. He's 6'8". He's not very good. He has one job, and he knows what that job is. John Scott was the leading vote-getter in the NHL All-Star Game. He was traded from the Phoenix Coyotes to the Montreal Canadiens on Friday. The Canadiens then sent him down to the AHL, and because they've done that, he's no longer eligible, technically, no longer eligible to play in the NHL All-Star Game. I don't know how much you follow the NHL All-Star Game. I mean, even if you're a diehard Blackhawks fan, I don't know if you're all that interested in the NHL All-Star Game, especially since now that they've turned it into a 3-on-3 tournament, right? So John Scott, who already was going to be kind of a comical sight there at the All-Star Game if it was 5-on-5 hockey. I mean, the guy could have been scratched from his own All-Star Game, by God. He's only played 11 games this year. That's the other thing. The guy, I mean, he's not out there every day. I mean, it would be one thing if he's, you know, there and plays and, you know, meaningful grit guy or whatever. He's got 11 games under his belt so far this year. Now, he's got the right attitude about this whole thing. It's fun, and it's funny, and it's a fan vote. This isn't a travesty that John Scott got your leading All-Star, you know, ballots. It's not.
Not even a little?
But no, by running him out there in the All-Star game, by sending him out there, you actually bring more eyes to the All-Star game than you do otherwise. And this whole nonsense, and I don't know if you've seen TSN's Bob McKenzie has written about it some too. There's been some talk, okay? There's a lot of conspiracy theory going on. That John Scott got traded, essentially, and sent down to the AHL, essentially, so that the NHL could, in their minds, save face at the All-Star game and not have to put John Scott out there. That's, to me, ridiculous. You got a bunch of fans, the ones who apparently cared. Yeah, sure, it was a little bit of a joke and a little bit of a rise out of, you know, whatever. But there you have it. There's your spectacle. The All-Star game is nonsense as it is. And I mean that in a good way. It can be fun. It can be just ridiculous. It can just be whatever.
Yeah, but
it's an exhibition game. Why not let it be that with John Scott involved?
Okay.
Why not reward a guy that's, like he said, grinded out a career doing the only thing he knows how to do on skates and let him be rewarded for this?
Well, okay, let's just back off for a second here. Now, number one, John Scott, as adorable as he is and as nice of a guy as he is, he's not an all-star, and he wouldn't get sent down if he was anywhere even close to an all-star caliber player.
Doesn't matter. The all-star game's ridiculous.
Okay, fine. It is a ridiculous game. I will agree with you, but it also...
It's 3-on-3 and no one knows who's on whose team.
Yeah, but it is still,
nobody knows.
Yeah, but it's still a nice honor to be selected to the All-Star game. And also, there's money attached to it for some guys, right? If you're an All-Star, you get a, whatever, $10,000, $50,000, whatever it is, bonus.
Yes, but if you're an All-Star NHL player, you're probably making a couple of good dollars anyway. John Scott's not, and if he's got the bonus, he's the guy, to me, who deserves it.
Right, but it still should go to deserving guys, and no disrespect to John Scott, but, you know, this makes me think more along the lines of, if the fans are like that out of it, then they shouldn't have a vote, or their vote should count less.
So you're
if you're going to vote him on...
So Kobe's going to be an All-Star this year.
Different.
And I understand that it's much different. I understand that it's much different. Cal Ripken in his final season, an All-Star.
Different.
Shouldn't have been an All-Star, but because of that great career, he was. You're telling me that some outside circumstances... I'm not saying Hall of Fame career before him. By no means am I equating John Scott to Bobby Hull or anything like that in his career prior to this game. But you're telling me that other circumstances can't help influence what's going to happen in an exhibition game?
I'll tell you one thing.
Where no one's going to give a damn or try anyway?
I'll tell you one thing I like about this, mostly in regards to you. It's very rare that you'll take up a cause, and you are taking up the John Scott.
You're damn right I am.
You've got a bleeding heart for
You're
John.
You're damn right I do.
And you know what? It's rare that things that you'll get from cause. Well, that's just the way it is. I mean, well, that's how you do the do. That's the deal there.
It's
the
cookie crumbles.
Right. I mean, that's more. Connor is actually stepping out and taking up the John Scott cause, which is, by the way, a very rare thing that you would take up too. Because it's like, John Scott, what the hell is he doing in the All-Star game? Good. I'm glad he's in the NHL, the AHL, playing, you know. That would be what I would expect from him. But I like the fact that you're stepping up for John Scott. Good for you.
I love the guy. Someone needs to. The 6 o'clock hour will be devoted to John Scott discussion. we will also have the Wildcat Insider segment. Dr. Jim Phillips is going to join us too. I will tell you this. The Chicago Auto Show takes over McCormick Place from Saturday, February 13th through Sunday, February 21st. Fifth Third Bank is the exclusive bank of the Chicago Auto Show and your destination for discount coupons for opening weekend or weekday admission. Stop at any Fifth Third Bank today and pick up your discount coupons. And when you're at the Auto Show, be sure to visit the Fifth Third Bank exhibit and tell them your friends at WGN Radio told you to stop by and say hello. Fifth Third Bank, member FDIC. .536 here on WGN. The Patriots have just tacked up another one. You heard it in the non-part news there. 21-6. Gronk is fine. He's healthy. I love that. Carm, you know, I were just talking during the break. Big question going into the Patriots-Chiefs game. Is Gronk going to be healthy?
Right.
Is Gronk going to play?
It was so annoying.
Yes.
Yeah, Gronk got a knee injury. He's got shots in his knee. He's Gronk. He'll do something. He'll be fine. By the way, before that touchdown, too, Nile Davis fumbled, but there's, and I'm going to retweet it right now, at the Carm on Twitter.
You have some angst right now.
Well,
I can see it. The frustration's bubbling up.
Not a fumble. Not a fumble.
Was he down?
He was down.
All right, then.
I mean, come on.
All right, so hashtag not a fumble and hashtag free John Scott, I think, are the two trending hashtags on the show this afternoon. We've both found causes to champion. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about Jake Arrieta, the Cubs, and exactly where situations sit there. I think a couple of things are interesting here. As Cubs convention kind of goes on, there are some, you know, talks around the rest of the league as well that are kind of... I don't know, tangential, I guess, to kind of the conversations going on there.
What does that word mean again?
Connecting to, kind of abridged, bridged with. Tangential really means that the line intersects.
And intersecting, you know, of divisions?
There are intersecting conversations here.
Are they polymorphous and ancestral in base?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm
you
with
got
you
it.
Now.
100%.
Good.
The hell are you talking about?
I have no idea.
John Mozeliak, the Cardinals GM, was talking a little bit to Derek Gould, the president of the Baseball Writers Association and writer for
big position.
St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And he was talking, Mozeliak was saying that there's lately been, and this is his quote, I'm going to do the air quotes right now. Mozeliak said there's lately been, quote, more momentum for bringing the designated hitter to the National League. Cubs president of baseball operations, this is where the tangential thing comes into play. Cubs president of baseball operations, Theo Epstein, also addressed the possibility of the DH coming to the NL today, according to Bruce Miles of the Daily Herald. It was on Twitter. Theo said, I'm doing the air quotes again, here we go. We have so many good hitters coming that we wouldn't mind the DH, Epstein says. But again, they're not really planning for it and don't see it as an imminent thing. I find it interesting. I mean, just in that I'd like to see the DH across the league mostly just to normalize things. I would like to see one type of baseball played, and I think that's the type of baseball that ought to be played. I think that's where we're moving here in an environment that could, I think, in my opinion, use more offense. I know there are other people that think the offense is fine, that the level of run scoring is fine across the league. I'd like more, and I think a DH is one small step in the right direction.
You don't like the strategy of when to pinch hit?
The strategy of that. I love it.
You wouldn't miss that.
I love it. No, I would miss that. I absolutely would miss
that. But you'd give that up for more offense.
It's not so much that I'd... It's a great question, actually. It's not so much... And I hadn't really posed that to myself that way. It's not so much that I'd give that up for the DH. It's just that I think that's kind of where we're headed anyway. So let's just go ahead and get to it.
Why can't we just get back to the John Scott, Connor McKnight mindset of...
Hashtag free John Scott. I'll give you that first and foremost. I mean, that man deserves to be in the All-Star game.
Hashtag universal, no DH, get rid of in the American League, and I know that's not a possibility.
See, that's the thing. You know, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I completely understand the baseball fan that goes, this is not the way we should be playing. Like, let pitchers hit. They're athletes too. Punters are people. Pitchers are people. I get it. I understand that. And I'm actually with you on a lot of that. Jake Arrieta is a pretty good hitter. Zach Greinke is actually a fairly decent hitter. Madison Bumgarner can absolutely rake, right? So why not let some of these guys hit? Is it all that bad to watch? I just think that the way, and a lot of different reasons, we're moving toward an environment that's going to be all DH. I figure why not get there sooner rather than later. That's just kind of, that's where I fall on that.
See, I'm on the opposite side, shockingly, on this one, where I would just hold the line, hold the line, hold the line, hold the line, keep the National League as is. I think it is odd, if not actually moronic, that you can't figure out universal ground, that there's one on one side and one on the other side.
Seems weird.
It's bizarre. It's... But, you know, there's compromise in the world.
When you saw the difference, too, I mean, even in the World Series, the Royals were looking for places to put Kendrys Morales in. I mean, they were hoping for a situation in, like, the sixth or seventh that they could pop that bat into the lineup without an actual position to play. And that's just, you know, the way you look around, I guess you look around the league, and it's easier to point to more players and get them more jobs if there's 15 more jobs in this game. You know what I mean? I mean, if Kyle Schwarber had an option to DH...
Right.
A lot of issues kind of go away, you know? A lot of what do they do, what can't they do, what will they do with Kyle Schwarber kind of goes, okay, well, the hell with it. He's going to get 600 at-bats. It doesn't matter where he's going to play.
Right. And listen, I get Theo's comment that the DH plays very well for this team, but I also wouldn't mind if Theo actually took a stance on the issue regardless of the Cubs. Hey, you know, I think that the DH belongs in baseball because of X, Y, and Z, or I like the traditional way because of X, Y, and Z. I wouldn't mind a thought and rather than how it plays for the Cubs. But I'm sure the question was asked that way.
I'm sure he had, and once you mention it, I know that he has spoken about that before, and I just wish I could remember what that interview was and how the context worked around it, but I'm just totally spacing on that right now.
I would think a guy who, you know, brought over David Ortiz probably feels preferential to the DH.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, doesn't having a DH make the GM's job easier? Mm. Or at least a little bit more simple? It's a whole extra spot to find, you know. I mean, you can slide guys in and out, too. I mean, we're not talking about, I don't think in this day and age, I think we've by far left the days of Jason Giambi and David Ortiz having, and having one DH. I think teams in the American League like to rotate that thing through for a lot of different players, you know, and in a lot of different player types. That can DH and give you some different things off the bench and kind of change the look of that team from a day-to-day basis.
Speaking of the look of the team, can I ask you a question about a player?
You can absolutely ask me a question about a player.
All right, so there's a guy out there.
I want badly for you to ask me a question about a player.
Well, I was watching the highlights from the Cubs convention last night, sitting on my couch thinking of you as well, and they're going through the whole season and showing different walk-offs and... Oh, there's Dexter Fowler. And oh, there's Dexter Fowler again. And oh, there's again Dexter Fowler pumping his fist as Kyle Schwarber sends one to the moon in Pittsburgh, a game that you were at. And then I'm thinking to myself, no one has signed Dexter Fowler, and the Cubs did pick up Jason Hayward, and he's supposed to play center field, but he's really an elite right fielder. Not saying he can't play center, but he's elite in right. And you've got young pitching in different places like, say, Tampa Bay or perhaps Miami, and you've got Jorge Soler and other different pieces that could be put together.
Pieces. I think that's important to note.
Right, yeah. Okay. So then I'm thinking to myself, and, you know, Hayward could lead off and probably will, but Dexter Fowler is a leadoff guy, so that... And, yeah, it's going to cost you some dough, but since he's still out there, maybe not as much dough as they originally thought. And even outside of the Cubs, you look at the White Sox, who have wanted an outfielder for a while right now. And, yes, Chris Davis went back to the Baltimore Orioles. So maybe Yoenis Cespedes is still in play for the Sox.
Possible.
And maybe,
Justin Upton.
Maybe Justin Upton is as well. But then, you know, there's also some little rumblings around Dexter Fowler, too, with the Sox, who, you know, you can move Adam Eaton to right field.
They'd talked about that before when Trace Thompson was still in the picture.
Right.
Robin had mentioned that. Trace could get some work in center, and Adam could go to a corner.
So I'm wondering if you think there's any real Dexter Fowler conversation in this city right now on either side of town.
Well, let's look at the north side first, since they have a convention going right now. Dexter Fowler hit himself. Do you remember what Dexter Fowler's line was throughout the whole season?
254, 350, something like that.
250, 345, 350, very good.
God,
and 411 on this. Wow, look at you giving a slash line out like it's nobody's business. Handing them out. Who wants a slash line? Carm's got them all for you.
Never impressed Connor more than I think that moment.
That was impressive. But you'll remember, too, though, that through September, and I want to make sure I pick the right date. I'll just go to my birthday there, the 12th of July. You go back to the 12th, about All-Star break time.
Yep.
Dexter Fowler came on strong. He was a .280 hitter, a .394 on base, and a .467 slugging. I mean, and then the month before, I think it was all of June, it was awful. It was really,
right,
really bad.
And let me say another thing, because I think we were doing a show at the time, too, when they traded for Dexter Fowler, and the intel that I got on that from his Houston Astros days was that Dexter Fowler didn't really like to play baseball all that much.
Yeah.
And when Dexter Fowler had a toenail that was out of whack, he was going to be out for 5-6 days. And then I was also told that, when the Cubs made a bunch of moves this year, mainly taking Starlin out of the lineup around August when the team took off, both Dexter Fowler and Jorge Soler were told by manager Joe Maddon that you're on watch, that, hey, this is not the only move. If you guys don't step it up,
sure,
you're going to be out of the lineup. Well, Dexter Fowler stepped it up at that point. So it kind of makes me wonder if they're a little... One of the reasons that they had seemingly no interest in bringing him back is because they were leery about giving a guy a long-term deal, because this is how he played in a contract year, and he kind of had to be, hey, buddy.
Well, he was – I know the conversation happened. He was also hurt with the ankle thing for 2 weeks, I think in the late June, early July kind of scenario. And I think once things turned around there – but you're right. I mean, pitch selection, what things looked like, approach at the plate. I mean, things were very different in June than they looked in July. I mean, the on-base is what sets this guy apart as a center fielder, I think.
And he could have
a little bit of power too.
He could have been pressing too. And there were just moments in time with Dexter, like balls hit over his head. It's not going to bounce off of the ivy.
Right.
It's going to hit the ivy and it's going to sit there. And he's jogging 60% to go get the baseball. It's like, dude, yeah, that's probably a double, but you're still. I mean, I don't want to be old school here too much, but run after the ball and pick it up and throw it in. That's not really that too much to ask.
Well, I think, and that's part of the conversation that you've had on the north side of town is what do you have in center field? What did you have last year? And what does Jason Hayward bring you this year in center field? I don't know that Dexter Fowler was a terrible center fielder last year. I think he was
okay.
By and large, yeah, fine. I think you can go fine. I'll bring up the UZRs if you really want to hear them. I mean, I guess it's worth talking about.
I love when you go UZR.
I know you do.
Well, it's not so much the center field play that makes, because now I'm like on two sides here where I'm saying like he wasn't great out there and he was fine. But the reason why I like him is that I do like a traditional leadoff hitter, and I do like the fact that he gets on base all the time, and I do think that helps your offense a ton. And when you have somebody like that in front of everybody else, your offense is going to go. And to me, Jason Hayward in the middle of the lineup, if I'm Theo Epstein, is a lot more appealing than him at the top. It's fine him in the top, but not ideal.
Right, but okay, so here's where you get into this Fowler conversation, right? So, we talked about his numbers from the middle of July through the end of the season, and the on-base was .396, right?
Okay.
That's fantastic. I mean,
that's like
great.
That's like Connor McKnight's Sunday softball.
Oh, my God. Mark Carmen's got the best eye in the league. People should know that. The guys, 400 on base is something, right? But to go through a month and a half, almost 2 months, of a sub 300 on base, and you're just not getting on. You're an out. You are just an out. You're a walking out. You're going up to the plate and then walking back into the dugout. That is your job when you get to the ball. That's all you're doing. That's wildly different levels of production, right? So, you know, whether that's the injury, whether that was, you know, a talking to or whatever, I don't think, and this is kind of the long way around to this question, I don't think that just because you had a guy last year and you saw him, you know, perform really well at times and fairly well overall and help the scope of that ball club, I don't think you just go ahead and move pieces that you're looking for as long-term future pieces. Guys like Jorge Soler, the rest of a minor league system, Javi Baez, if you want to go that far. I don't think you do that just so you can bring back your nominally average defensively center fielder when a guy that you're kind of taking a risk on, you know, offensive-wise.
And that's really how it looks the Cubs are going to go about it. Maybe, what do you think of him on the south side? I mean, maybe Dexter Fowler's coming in at 2 years and $35 million, which in today's baseball is reasonable.
Yeah, that's walking around money.
Right.
That's back pocket.
You hold 17 and a half a year.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty accurate what he's going to get. I mean, maybe it's 3 years and 50, but I don't see Dexter Fowler getting a 4 year, $80 million plus deal.
Well, he was given the qualifying offer, so that's 14 and change, almost 15, and obviously attached to the draft pick there. So there's, you know, there's that going in. So that's kind of the Fowler part of the equation. I find it interesting. Let's kick this can down the road a little bit. I know the Cubs convention's making some noise, and Kyle Schwarber is one of the guys doing some talking. I wouldn't mind hearing that. We'll take a quick break here. Come back with a little Kyle Schwarber on the other side. WGN.
I feel like we're going to win the division. And, you know, we showed what we could do when we're all in it for the common goal. You know, we were all in. And, you know, I got lucky. I got to come on later on the year, and these guys were still on the right path, and then we really just able to help them. It seemed like we really kicked it in after that Giants series. You know, after that, we were rolling, and it was just a fun thing to be a part of, fun thing to experience. Now we know what to expect. You know, probably going to be more targets on our back. We're going to have to, you know, come with our A game every game.
Championship.
Is that... Welcome back to the beat. That's Kyle Schwarber, the Schwarbeast, the man who deposits baseballs on top of scoreboards, the man who destroys baseballs into the Allegheny River. That guy talking about the Cubs and the fact that he thinks they're going to go ahead and win a division this year.
They removed that baseball.
Also, was that the championship drop from the old ESPN advertisement where the guy can't pronounce TJ Houshmandzadeh?
Exactly.
And he drafts him, and then everyone's like, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Nope, that's not it. TJ Houshmandzadeh. Championship.
TJ, who's your mama?
TJ, who's your mama? Oh, that's old school. That's good stuff. Mike Jacobson produces us and does it well. So he's talking about winning championships. He's talking about, I think he's talking about the fact that by and large, the St. Louis Cardinals are projected to drop 10, 12 wins off the 100 total they put together last year. So I've said this a couple of times, and I believe this to be true. Whether you're the Cardinals, whether you're the Pirates, whether you're the Cubs, you can be, specifically the Cubs because of how young they are and their additions over the year, you can be a better team next year and not have 97 wins.
Sure, I agree.
You'd be a better team next year and win 91 ballgames. That's just the way the long term works.
Well, I'm curious because you're nothing if not a numbers guy. Like you go to bed and
try to be.
And you just stare at numbers.
I am no Sahadev Sharma.
Congratulations to who?
Congrats. I'm going to miss him.
What's his
I'm gonna
new
miss
gig?
The work. We don't know yet.
You're buddies with Sahadev.
Maybe I know a couple of things, but I've been asked not to say anything.
Well, that sucks.
I'm just saying. Well, we're going to miss him over at BP Wrigleyville.
All I know is the guy wrote more comprehensive articles than anyone I've ever read in the history of baseball. And then he writes about, I got a great opportunity coming. I can really get comprehensive now. I'm like, what more could you possibly say?
He's going to be writing like 15,000 word think pieces on the ninth seam of a baseball.
I mean, good Lord.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Congratulations to him. I know that's perfect for you. But you're getting back to the number. Thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Cubs, what is it, FanGraphs that has them winning 97? That's
yeah, probably. But they do the Zips projection, too.
The old Zips projection.
The old Zipper.
Okay, the Zipper, though, last year had the Royals winning like 71 games.
That's true. I think by and large, everybody really kind of missed on the Royals. I know there were a handful of people that thought, and I think you were one of them, that thought they were coming back, but I think a lot of people thought that that team, and I think maybe it's because of the way they played in the playoffs 2 years ago, that it was just kind of overachieved.
Right. Well, they steal bases. They don't. They bunt. They do things that the baseball metric people, whatever you want to call yourselves. What do you call yourselves?
Sabermetricians.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not one, but the good ones are.
You're
people
not?
Who actually. No, I'm not. I can't do any of the math. I can only tell you what it means, and badly at that.
Yes, but you believe in it.
I do. I do. But so do. Let me tell you. So do 30 clubs in baseball. At least a little bit. At least to varying degrees.
Right. But like, okay. There's a balance, and I think you know
there absolutely is. Completely agreed.
Okay, good. We're on the same level. That's the point that I'm making here. Like, you know, when you see that the Cubs are going to win the World Series, according to Fangers, it doesn't like, oh yeah, now. I mean, it's no reason to really jump up. But now they have no idea what's going to happen.
Right. It's like being ranked number one in the AP poll the week before college football starts. Super.
Right.
Wait. I mean, it helps. It's nice.
Better than being last.
It means you probably have a pretty good team. Now, as long as nobody gets hurt. Everything
right.
still has to go your way, and the playoffs are still a crapshoot.
Yeah, Jake Arrieta's shoulder doesn't fall off, you'll be all right. All right, good.
Everyone's shoulders don't fall. I mean, you got to keep all your shoulders together.
I'm
you
okay. If Kyle Hendricks' shoulder, I don't want that for him, but if his shoulder falls off, we're okay. If Arrieta's falls off, we're in trouble. John Lester's falls off, trouble. Hector Rondon, they probably could survive.
Your guy, Hector Rondon, how about him? $4.2 million in arbitration. Were you doing cartwheels around the room when your guy got paid?
Well, see, I think we got to give some context here. Back in the day, Connor.
Back like 3 years ago.
Yeah. Connor was unwilling to give Hector Rondon the love. And I'm like, dude, the guy's good.
Carm like goes to an afternoon game at Wrigley, has three or four Budweisers with a friend, and he's coming back going, I think this Rondon with the splitter and the slider, I think he's got something.
I got into Rondon. All
you right. really did. And I was wrong, and you were right.
I'll take one time it happened, team. All right. Quick timeout, 6 o'clock hour. We'll start it with the. No, we're just going walking all the way up to news.
Yeah, just hand it to the man.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't realize that that was the case.
It's okay. We'll do a little production here on the air. We can do that.
I can still tease the 6 o'clock hour. We're going to have a very interesting conversation with Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern's athletic director. There's a lot going on around the NCAA, including the declaration date for the NBA draft, which is real interesting. And also there's a resolution to address time demands on student athletes. And Jim is very much involved in all that. So we'll talk Northwestern, but also kind of some overriding stuff as well. Plus, of course, Cats basketball on the court tonight versus Penn State. We will have Vic Law of your Northwestern Wildcats, who's redshirting with the torn labrum this season. So a lot to do in the 6 o'clock hour.
Holy touchdown, baby!
Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Connor McKnight, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Welcome back. Final hour of the show. Well, we got an hour and some change. We're walking you right up Northwestern Hoops. They get Penn State tonight here on WGN. He's Mark Carmen. I'm Connor McKnight. We're going to start Wildcat Insider at 6:15. Dr. Jim Phillips, the athletic director of the Northwestern Wildcats, is going to join us to start out our journey. Some actually interesting things going on in the NCAA, despite the fact that we're just kind of warming up into conference play. You know, you had a really big game in Michigan State and Iowa. Your Hawkeyes took down Sparty.
It's
at
impressive.
Home. That was, and it wasn't even, I mean, that was a... Oof. Put him on it. Put
beat,
it on him.
Beat him down.
Yeah,
and then
put it on him.
Earlier today, you had Maryland just smoking Ohio State 100-65. That was a loss. The Cats, they lost to the Buckeyes at home. What was it now?
Two Tuesdays ago? Is that what it was?
Whenever it was a bad loss. The Buckeyes have no offensive firepower, and that's a game that if you're dreaming about that Northwestern NCAA tournament run, that was one that you didn't want to lose. But still sitting at 3-2. Cats are actually 3-2 in the Big Ten for the first time since 1967-68. 3-2. I mean, that's not 5-0. But it hasn't been easy over there to build the basketball program. And the Chris Collins, hopefully they'll continue it going tonight with Penn State. Again, another must win. Because their stretch coming up here is not going, it's much, much more difficult. But actually some interesting scores today, and the number one, we mentioned it earlier today, but Notre Dame goes on the road and beats Duke at Cameron, 95-91, go Irish. Big Ten wise, Indiana went over Minnesota 70-63. Cats get them next Saturday. Nebraska beat Illinois in Champaign 78-67. The Illini now 1-4 in the Big Ten. So there could be a coaching change in Champaign at some point.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's – I mean, how do you do that with not having your athletic department in order? Maybe.
Talk about the ups and downs. Yeah, right, exactly. You've got the interim who's hiring a head coach that's not ideal, but, you know, we're going to try him out anyway. And then you've got the ups and downs of that team beating – what did they beat? Purdue the other day?
And that was a huge win.
I mean, it was a really nice win.
But no.
But no.
You lose to Nebraska at home. That'll – that'll take off any buzz you were
all
enjoying.
The shine.
But Iowa going in and winning in East Lansing 76-59, that was Thursday night. Wow. Go Fran McCaffrey and your Iowa Hawkeyes. Mike Jacobson and I, of course, both alums of the University of Iowa, and we love the Deadwood and the great breakfast places of the world, like the Hamburg Inn. Jacobson, you want to throw out an Iowa City spot of yours? Go ahead. Love to hear it.
Brothers Bar and Grill. Shout out.
Brothers Bar? Yeah, there's a couple of those. It's a good spot.
After
good
my spot. Time, making me feel old.
Well, we were talking about with the Northwestern program that this win, the win against Wisconsin, good, well and done, and then Penn State were two that you really wanted to get before you went on the road to Maryland. You know, just kind of shore some things up before you got to head out east, take on another three in Maryland.
Yeah, that would be good. It's not just Maryland, though. I mean, look at their schedule. They go, I should know it by heart, but they go
it's at Indiana after Maryland, and then Michigan State at home, and then on the road against Iowa.
Oops.
That's a grinder. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. That's a beast of a schedule.
It is. It is. It softens up at the very end for them. But really, like, can you get one win in the next four after tonight? Can you beat Michigan State at home? Can you win at Indiana?
Can you key bet? Yeah, that's the thing, going into Indiana and trying to win that game. I don't want to say it's a vulnerable team at this point, but it is, you know, it's not what you're dealing with. It's the middle of that sandwich between Maryland and then Michigan State and Iowa.
And then you come home, you've got Minnesota, who they already beat by 25 on the road. You play at Ohio State.
That's a vengeance game. I mean, you've got to mark that. That has to be circled. I mean, get back up for that thing and take it down the way you should have.
Dave Bennett knows the stats better, but they haven't beaten Ohio State in forever. It's double-digit straight losses to the Buckeyes. Illinois at home, got to have it. At Purdue, going to be tough. At Michigan. Michigan just beat Maryland early in the week.
Yeah, that's not a terrible ball club.
Rutgers at home, got to have
you're
it.
You're right. It softens up early. Yeah. It softens up late, rather.
Yeah. Rutgers at home, at Penn State, Nebraska. If you win every single game that you should win or could win, you get to 9-9.
And you get a break there somewhere. You get to your 10-8, and there you go. That's your bid. That's your tourney bid.
Yeah, baby. So much. See, and people right now are like, why are you talking to Northwestern? Let me tell you something. We are out in front of this story. When they get to the tournament.
You heard it here first.
You've heard every step of the way right here on 720 Double. Yes, we know the NFL playoffs are going on.
Yeah.
But we're calling Cat Hoop right now, right here.
By the way, speaking of those NFL. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go Cats. 27-13 now.
No.
The Patriots lead the Chiefs. I know. I don't mean to kill the dream, Don Quixote, but I don't think that the Chiefs are going to overtake the Patriots this afternoon. Don't think it's happening. Get stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Wildcat Insider coming up in just a couple of minutes right here on 720 WGN.
The Wildcats of Northwestern, Evanston, Illinois.
It's time for Wildcat Insider. On the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
.615, time for the Wildcat Insider here on 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Mark Carmen, and we are pleased to head out to the phone lines and bring in Dr. Jim Phillips, the athletic director for Northwestern University. Dr. Jim, good to have you on again, sir. Good to talk with you. How you been?
I'm good, Connor. I wish you and Mark were at Welsh Ryan Arena tonight, but
you got to pay the bills, so somebody's got to work, right?
Well, we're kicking Mark out of the studio at about 7 o'clock. He's going to head up there early, make sure that everything's operating properly up there. But you're right, I do have to pay bills.
And Dr. Jim, you know the truth on that. No one's kicking me out. I am leaving on my own. I have a corporate jet sitting outside.
Escort to the tarmac.
It's taking me right to Welsh Ryan Arena, where we missed you earlier in the week. Where were you, sir? It's unlike you to miss a Cats Wisconsin game.
I was in San Antonio, Texas. Is my work as the chair of the NCAA Division I Council, and I felt like I was in San Antonio long enough to seek residency, but I was able to get back here. But it was really a good week, 5 days down there, a lot going on at the NCAA level. We've talked about some of those things in the past, but I thought we made some progress on some really important issues.
Well, you mentioned it too, and that those meetings down in San Antonio, the Big 12 is now going to have a championship game in their football league, despite the fact that they've only got 10 teams. I kind of get the sense, and I have some family down in Texas, and it's Big 12 country. I kind of get the sense that they kind of felt held hostage by some of those rules, and you know, I'm talking about fans of, you know, Texas or Baylor or whatever. And the way that season, that college football season had last year with Baylor and TCU not being able to duke it out one more time and being left out of the college football playoff, what led to that decision? What were conversations like up to that? And was this just something that was going to get fixed eventually, or was this take a movement?
Yeah, it took a coordinated effort, I really believe, across the FBS conferences, the 10 of them, but obviously the 5 in particular have a little bit of advantage with weighted voting. But in the end, the first proposal that the Big 12 put forward, Mark, was more of a complete deregulation. Hey, you can have a championship game, and it couldn't be for, you know, within two teams within your conference. And I just felt, and we felt in the Big 10, that we needed to have a little bit of parameters on it. And so we got to a really good place for everybody involved, and the Big 12 was happy. But in the end, it's not completely deregulated. You can, for the Big 12 now, play everybody and just have one division. So you play 9 opponents, and then you play 3 non-conference games, and then one and two that finish play in the championship game. Or you can go to 2 divisions of 5, play everybody in your division, and then play as many crossovers as you want, and then those 2 divisional winners advance. So it was supported by the Pac-12 and by the SEC and a number of the other 5 conferences, as they're called. And it really is good for college football. So we won't have to go through the situation you described before because it is unfair. It's unfair to the kids on those teams, those programs, the fans. And in the end, you want to have college football really put their best teams forward.
Do you think we're done with the jumping around? Because, you know, I was working in Kansas City when Missouri left the Big 12, and, you know, that's a phenomenal rivalry with Kansas, and those schools, it was real bitter, and they're not playing. And ultimately, you know, the athletes want to play each other and have that great game, and the fans want to see it, but people got hurt because of money. Do you think that the jumping around is pretty much done, at least for a while?
Mark, I don't know if it's completely done, but a rule like this settles the landscape a little bit more. And we didn't want the Big 12 to have to add teams just to have a conference championship. That didn't make any sense. And so I think we do need to settle in a little bit on the conference expansion. There was this seismic, you know, type of alteration over the last few years. Schools now are kind of adjusting to the new leagues. Those that have changed, those that have been in leagues for a long time are adjusting to some of the new colleagues that they have. So I think we're okay for a period of time. And I hope, really, as a traditionalist, I hope we're good for a while. But a rule like this, really, I think, has a ripple effect. Not only is it fair for the Big 12, but it does send a message that you don't have to have 12 teams or 14 teams in a conference to have a conference championship and really to declare who your best team is.
Northwestern Athletic Director Dr. Jim Phillips joining us here on the Wildcat Insider portion of the show. 2 other rules passed down at the meetings in San Antonio that caught my attention. One of them was just kind of, you know, this is how things have been going on, so let's make the rule. And it catches my attention because I'm a huge baseball guy. But, you know, now high schoolers who get drafted are going to be allowed to have an agent negotiate with the club that drafted them and still be eligible for NCAA baseball, which I think it's the way it's been going on for a long time, and I love that we finally put that in writing for kids. The other rule is that the declaration date for the NBA draft got pushed back, and that's going to let student-athletes learn more and know more about their own situations before they make a momentous and gigantic decision that stops them from coming back and playing college hoops. Congrats. I'm glad this is where we're going.
Thanks, Connor. I'm really proud of the council's work, and those are two rules that we passed through the council. The NBA position was that we were having kids making uneducated decisions. We were forcing them in April to declare for the draft, and then they find out through education process that maybe they're not even going to be drafted or they're going to be a late second rounder. That's not right. So now we have a chance to go through. Kids have a chance to have a workout. They have a chance to have a pre-draft assessment, and then they can either come back to college or they can declare. Now, it's not great for the coaches. The coaches kind of barked about
sure.
it, and I understand it. But at the end of the day, this was about what's best for the student-athletes, just like the football championship rule and the baseball rule that you mentioned. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, kids out of high school, I've said this before, not everybody should come to college. The baseball situation, hockey, tennis, golf, if you're good enough as a high school student athlete and you can go play in your professional respective league, you should go do that
yeah.
if that's what your dream is. But we've kind of held them hostage a little bit by saying, you got to come to college. Well, now these high school baseball student athletes can also be educated in a decision. And if they get a great offer from a club, great. If it's a great signing bonus and part of it also is that you can go back to school whenever your baseball career finishes, let's do this in the right way. And these were, again, two rules in particular, the NBA and MLB positions. Those were good for student-athletes, good for student-athlete welfare, and I think they send the right message. But that's the work of the council, and that's where, again, I've told you before, I'm really honored to chair this group because it's difficult at times to get 354 schools across Division I and 32 conferences to see and to believe in the same kinds of policies. But this in particular was a really good week.
Well, it's great for the NCAA that you are chairing the group, Dr. Jim, because you had the whole Kane Coulter protest, whatever you want to call it, on your campus, and I thought you guys handled it supporting the kids and supporting discussion.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't think you could have done that any better. And it's obvious that you want what's best for college athletics, but you also want what's best for the student athlete as well. And I mean, I think that comes through incredibly clearly. I do have a question on the NBA draft. Was there any discussion about, hey, we can allow them to go through the draft process if they get drafted, okay, and if they don't, then they can just come back to school. Why not just allow them to go through the draft, and if they get picked and they want to go, then they can go, and if not, then they can come back?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Carm, but in the end, we felt like this was the right way for us to go, and you can't always tell when teams are going to get drafted or not, or players are going to get drafted by teams or not, but we felt that they would be very educated by going through the pre-draft camp. They would have a chance to sit down with NBA executives and general managers and be able to find out, hey, this is where we think you're going to fall. And I think that's going to be plenty of information for them to decide whether they should go or come back. I think you get into a point where if they get drafted where they don't want to, you know, does that lead into negotiations? And if they don't get the dollars they want from the NBA, then they come back to college. And at some point, you know, for our college programs, you got to know who's on your roster for the next year. So I think this was a really a fair middle ground. Yeah.
So let's talk about the boys tonight. It's Penn State and 15-3 Wildcats. It's the best record. I'm reading this now. The best record through 18 games since the 45-46 season. Alex Ola, a game time. Have we seen? I'm looking at Mike Jacobs. Do we know if Alex Ola's gonna lace him up tonight? I hope he does. A big game for you guys. A big win against Wisconsin in the last one, and before a real tough stretch of four games. Carmen and I were talking about it just before you came on.
Well, even the VP for athletics doesn't know if Alex is going to play. So if I knew, I would tell you guys. But it really is a game time decision. He's been able to practice a little bit more. But, you know, we haven't been with him for 4 weeks. And the worst thing would be to bring him back too quick. And then all of a sudden he's out for sure. Another 3 or 4 weeks instead of maybe waiting another game or two. But he has been, before I left for San Antonio, he was running around pretty good. He was practicing pretty well. So we'll see about that. And then, you know, it's a little bit of a different kind of feel tonight. So Penn State comes in. I think they end up being a little bit of the underdog. We sometimes have that role. I think that's a dangerous game for us. because of the stretch you talked about. I mean, it's Murder's Row coming up. But I think you really have to stay in the moment, and that's where the kids and the coaches have really done a good job all year of just staying in the moment. We have to play well tonight in order to get another victory in our fourth in the Big Ten. If we don't, it'll be just like you see in college basketball. You'll get sent home with a loss, and you know that would be disappointing. But seasons can turn at any moment for the better, for the worse, and so we just have to get ready. And I think Penn State's going to be a really tough opponent. I think it's going to be tougher than people realize, and but I think we'll be ready to play.
Let me ask you one question on Brian McIntosh before you go here, Jim. I remember going to the exhibition game last year. I forget who you guys played, but I'm watching him in his first game as a Wildcat, and I walked out and thinking to myself, is this guy going to be the best player in the history of the program? And I know that that's a little bit tall, but, I mean, the guy puts up 28 the other day, carries you to a win, yeah. And he just keeps on getting better. I really think this guy could go down as the best player in the history of the program. Does that thought ever cross your mind?
Well, it's okay to dream, and that's what Brian McIntosh should do and try to excel to that level. And we could talk here 2.5 years from now, Mark, and you could be exactly right. He certainly is on a steep trajectory when it comes to his maturation as a student-athlete. I think he has the perfect coach to coach him. A very similar style of player, though I think, you know, he's got a chance to maybe even be better than Chris. But Chris was the Illinois High School Player of the Year, and he was a leader. He was a captain. He wasn't maybe the most athletic kid in the world, but he found a way to be, you know, a difference maker on the floor. And I think that's where McIntosh has a chance to be. Now, again, he's only about, 20 games into his sophomore year, so he's not even at the halfway point of his career, but I'm excited about him. Anybody that watches us play knows that we go as good as Brian McIntosh goes, and I think that's the true sign of somebody that has a chance to be a real star for your program.
Wisconsin's bringing the ball up to start the second quarter. They're coming down, and McIntosh is there to greet the point guard, and he's clapping right at him. Let's go. I loved it. Phenomenal attitude.
I think that's reminiscent of some of the WGN hoops games that I've heard with you and Ennett and Albrecht and all the rest of those guys. So, you know, he probably's got a little moxie like you do.
Well, you know, however you got to get it done, a little intimidation with a little clap, it goes a long way.
No one has ever put up 28 in a WGN basketball game. I'm telling you right now. Dr. Jim, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Connor. Mark, Connor, we got to get you out here soon, okay?
Looking good.
All right, take care, guys. Go Cats.
Absolutely. Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern's athletic director, he joins us every week on the Wildcat Insider portion of the show. I wish we could spend a little bit more time talking about the meetings in San Antonio. Some interesting things coming out of that. The NBA hoops one, the hoops and declaration thing, I think is fascinating kind of topic.
He makes a good point there too, though, because if you get drafted, say even if you get drafted in the first round, say 28 overall, right?
Right.
Well, I don't want to go and play for the Raptors. I don't want to play in Canada. I don't want to play for the Sacramento Kings or whatever. It's Chicago Bulls. I have something against Chicago. Nobody would ever say that, but just, you know, no, you get the point. That's probably a point of leverage that they don't want to give, you know, that puts them in an awkward spot. So I get it.
He's right. News coming up in a minute. Vic Law, Northwestern sophomore, going to join us just after the 6:30 news here on WGN.
720 WGN, Wildcat Insider continuing as we go out to Welsh Ryan Arena, the home of your Northwestern Wildcats, bringing in the sophomore forward who is redshirting, Vic Law, with us here on 720 WGN. Successful surgery on the shoulder back in November, redshirting the season. Vic, thanks for taking time. A huge game tonight for your teammates. And obviously, it has to have been tough for you to be off the court this season and watching what's going on, you know, historic season so far. How are you feeling? Have you been able to get back on the court? Have you been shooting the basketball? Give us an update.
I've been feeling pretty good. I've not been able to, you know, shoot or anything yet. You know, I'm still taking it slow, trying to make sure the surgery is, 100% successful. But this season has just been so great, just taking everything so positively. Of course, I, you know, want to be out in the court, but to just see, you know, what the guys have been able to do this season is just so fantastic that, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Pretty happy and excited to see what's going on.
So, Vic, last week on the show, we had Sanjay Lumpkin on the phone after the win up in Minnesota. Of course, that's where it's where Sanjay's from. So he had, like, you know, the entire Lumpkin clan up there. Everybody was at the ball game. And then apparently, so we're on the phone with him, and there's all this noise going on in the back of the bus. And Sanjay pegged you as the guy making all the noise after the win. So I got to ask, you know, what's the noise about? I mean, can we, you know, what's the bus antic like? I mean, after a win, I got to imagine there's a program, there's a procedure that goes down with the Wildcats.
We're just joking around, all laughing and having a good time after such a good win against a good team like Minnesota. We were just giving them.
Apparently, we have lost Vic Law.
We lost Vic Law.
We've lost Vic Law.
Right, put him on hold. See if we can get him back there. Lost Vic Law. So
you.
I wanted to know. He was just about to tell us what he was giving a hard time for.
I mean, I wanted to know too. I was interested. I was edge of the seat. Vic, as we try to get him back, just a reminder to everybody: he was the first top 100 recruit that Chris Collins brought in. It was a big time moment for the program, getting a guy of that level, local kid, South Holland, to come over to Northwestern and kind of started the cavalcade of recruits, the Brian McIntoshes of the world and Scotty Lindsay, and throw in Gavin Skelly. And now you've got guys like Derek Pardon, who was redshirted all season long. Alex Ola gets hurt. Joey Van Zegren gets hurt. This guy comes out of nowhere scoring 28, and they're winning crazy road games. It's really getting contributions that you did not think as we do a little tap dance. You're getting Vic Law back on the horn.
What's Vic go? 6'6", 6'8"?
Vic Law is 6'7".
Well, we got him back on the phone, so we can really...
He's a 6'7" superstar. Vic, we were just talking about how when Chris signed you, it was kind of a watershed moment for the program, getting a top 100 recruit, and you know Chris wanted you so bad. What for you, and I know you've just talked about it, but it's been a little while, what made you say, you know what, I want to go to Northwestern, I want to be a part of this first team that goes to the NCAA tournament?
First of all, you see how excited everything is around Evanston and all the buzz around Northwestern, you know, all the excitement that's, you know, coming into the program and everything like that. But just the level of commitment and excitement Coach Collins showed me through recruitment was a big part of why I believed in him. And, just being the first one, being the first team to make it and being the first team to really see this excitement and this, level of commitment from the fans and everybody at Welsh Ryan and Evanston is really something that's amazing.
So, Vic, what is your interaction with Coach Collins like on a practice-to-practice, day-to-day, game-to-game basis? I mean, obviously rehab's got to be probably your number one priority at this point, but do you have, responsibilities? Do you have I'm taking care of this on game day kind of stuff?
Well, I just try to help, with the team any way I can. I usually help them in drills, with passing and different things like that, telling guys when we're doing scout or, running through plays or something, if they can do something better, cut harder, make a better cut or something like that. I'm just trying to be an extra voice and, another positive, influence out there.
Have you found positives in this situation, basketball-wise, X-and-O's-wise? Can you find a way to grow?
Yeah. I mean, using this retro is, I guess a blessing in disguise. I'll be able to really, work on my game and get better and just take another year to grow mentally and really, look at the game from a different perspective, which a lot of people don't really get to see because as a player, you don't really get to, notice all the mistakes you make on the court. You're in the moment and your adrenaline is pumping, but, at the end of the bench, just watching game to game, now I'm really starting to notice a lot of things and a lot of things that can help me move forward.
Apparently it's emoji night at Welsh Ryan. You should follow Vic on Twitter at @follow_the_law. And by the way, Vic, you have made a tremendous choice by following at the Carm on Twitter. I thank you greatly for that. You're my man. Whose emoji are you holding in this picture? Is that you? Because you got to go to
That's me. I'm not going to give our guys the media anything, but that looks like Vic from freshman year.
I mean, that's not you.
That's Vic for freshman year. I love that.
That's legit not you. Your hair, you don't have that type of fro going on right now, and that kid just looks a little bit more. That's a less mature Vic Law. You have taken. Yeah. I mean, look at you right there. You're like looking at that. You look all confused.
Couldn't even believe it. I have facial hair. I didn't know where they were going with this, but this is definitely crude Vic.
Vic, who's your guy? Who did you grow up watching in the NBA? Your favorite player?
Ray Allen and Scottie Pippen were definitely my two favorite players.
Those are good choices.
You've got I'm going through your Twitter right now, which it's my favorite thing to do. You've got love for Jimmy Butler and his 53 the other night. You've got
I'm a huge Chicago fan. Everything. I'm so biased, Chicago.
Are you really? Okay, awesome. Are you,
watching the NFL games today, you know, all my friends from different states are, you know, cheering for the Patriots. Aaron Falzone cheering for the Patriots. And, of course, I'm saying, you know, if the Bears were in there, it wouldn't matter.
That's a great take.
So Vic, tell us this, and you could be honest. You be honest as you want. Bulls going to take down the Cavs in the East? Can they do it?
I'm hoping they do it. They stay healthy. Last year, if we stayed, if Gasol was playing and LeBron didn't make that shot in the corner.
Oh, God, that
I'm
shot.
I'm saying we're winning.
That shot in the corner was – it was cold. That's what that was. It was cold.
You know, every time, you know, you tell a Cleveland fan if he didn't make that shot in the corner, they're always going to say, well, if Derrick Rose didn't make that bank shot in game two.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That was a heartbreak. I mean, the way that series ended, man, I mean, it kind of looked like – I don't know. You want to call it running out of gas. You want to call it kind of giving up. It was tough to watch that one end.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. But it's so refreshing to see Derrick Rose, you know, coming back so strong, and Jimmy Butler playing the way he is. It's kind of heartbreaking to hear Joakim Noah with the shoulder injury, and I can kind of feel for him there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm, you know, still a huge believer in the Bulls, and I really think, you know, if they, you know, can continue to stay healthy down the stretch, and I think, you know, they have just about as good a chance as anybody.
How well do you know your old-school Bulls history? Because, you know, you got Papa Doug Collins sitting there in the purple seats watching you guys pretty much every game. Have you bonded with the older Coach Collins?
Yeah, you know, he's helped us, you know, as he can. And, you know, he's told us his old stories of the Bulls. So, yeah, you know, I haven't gotten the chance to communicate with him and talk to him about the old Bulls.
You know that Chris was a real average ball boy. I mean,
yeah, he tells us.
I mean, the effort was, you know, marginal. Because, I mean, I'm around the same age as Chris, and nobody was more jealous of him than me. Trust me. That I was, and I would just sit there like, see, if I was down there, I would have gotten that towel much quicker to Orlando Woolridge or whoever was around.
Nobody goes to get a Gatorade cup like Mark Carmen, Vic. You should know it. Vic, appreciate you coming on, my man. We'll talk to you again soon. Best of luck with the rehab, okay?
All right, thank you.
You got Thanks, it. Vic Law, sophomore at Northwestern. He's redshirting, and I very much look forward to him getting back on the court next season. I know a lot of Wildcat fans do. The Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients. It's a full-service clinic. The Eye Institute provides comprehensive eye exams, glasses and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and emergency eye care, all at an affordable price. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare.
With you till 7:15 tonight. Coming back here, a little bit of a special tribute. And, yeah, neither of us won the lottery. Connor's got something that he – yeah, well
– no, he didn't.
Connor's got something that he wants to share about that coming back here, and so do I, 720 WGN.
We spent some very special time with the legendary Carol Burnett. We'll talk about her amazing career, her Lifetime Achievement Award, and yes, her new role on television. Plus, inside stories of the Johnny Carson era. His nephew joins us to share them.
Dave Flyer, overnight tonight.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Imagine your life 5 years from now. Are you on the path you want to be on? It's time to take control of your future by getting a world-class education from one of the nation's top universities. Arizona State University is now offering over 100 top-tier degree programs 100% online. It's the exact same degree our on-campus students receive, but you can learn from anywhere in the country on your own schedule. For information, call 1-800-400-9129. Learn from ASU's world-renowned faculty and use ASU's global recognition to improve your visibility, professional network, and gain real-world experience you can start using today. The Wall Street Journal ranked ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates. Now discover how ASU Online can stand out on your resume and help separate you from the competition. We're ready to help you learn to thrive in your life, in your career, and beyond. To learn more about ASU Online degrees, call 1-800-400-9129. That's 1-800-400-9129.
Do you use a CPAP device for sleep apnea? Are you tired of dragging your bulky in-home device everywhere you travel? Then you need to know about Transcend. It's the world's first portable mini CPAP device and the only one you can try absolutely risk-free. Call now for your exclusive 10-day in-home trial. 1-800-511-9228. Transcend from MiniCPAP.com is as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. For even more freedom, you can add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. Transcend is so small and so light, you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can sleep comfortably even while flying. Transcend is our smallest, lightest, and most portable mini CPAP design ever, offering all the performance of a bulky standard in-home device. Enjoy the freedom to sleep comfortably. Call MiniCPAP.com now for this exclusive, one-of-a-kind 10-day in-home trial. 1-800-511-9228. 1-800-511-9228.
The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white, presented in a special and one-of-a-kind way. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and the first year, it's been all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted so your name blends in. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the feature section.
I already told my old lady if we win, we're going down to Myrtle Beach for about 10 months, and we're getting a timeshare and the whole nine yards, maybe a big boat, a couple boats, some, you know, a lot of boats, and we're going to have a great time.
So the Powerball is over, and that nice couple from Tennessee won the thing, and I guess some other people did too, but that was Chris Long. Rams, well, Los Angeles Rams defensive end Chris Long, but he was in St. Louis for the Powerball drawing. You probably saw it on Twitter, and everybody's still talking about the Powerball thing. Carm, you saw this when it came out. It's fantastic.
I did, and I love the Long family. I mean, that's Chris is the brother, of course, of Kyle.
They got a good sense of humor.
Kyle was at Bulls Wizards earlier in the week.
Was he really?
Yes, him and Jordan Mills, the former Bear offensive linemen, were hanging out, sitting courtside.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, they were good buddies and apparently still are.
There you go. Nice to have.
Which I'd like to see happen with other people that I see leaving me.
Chris committed to the character, for what that's worth. Wow, low dig. Chris committed to the character on the news. So it was the local news. It was like St. Louis local news. And they just had, the best part was the Chiron, the part where you put the guy's name up on the screen. The Chiron just said local Powerball player. It didn't even like, didn't really identify him as Chris Long. I think once the news package got in, like, I'm pretty sure the sound or the anchor was like, oh, and here's Chris Long. But the Chiron just had that up, which was hysterical. And Chris Long is, if you haven't seen it, go take a look. He's decked out in like a camo jacket and a mesh trucker hat and like stunner shades and this glorious mustache. And I love that he committed to the character. He's going down to Myrtle Beach. I'm told my old lady we're going to go down to Myrtle Beach. A lot of boats. Really committed to the boat thing.
It's a great troll of the
it is
the SEC / whoever else you want to throw under the umbrella of a bunch of boats. Ed Obradovich has a boat. I don't think he was going at OB, though.
I like how he picked Myrtle Beach, too. I think that's my favorite part.
I already told my old lady if we win, we're going down to Myrtle Beach for about 10 months, and we're getting a timeshare and the whole nine yards, maybe a big boat, a couple boats, some, you know, a lot of boats, and we're going to have a great time.
It's like two of the worst investments ever, a timeshare and a boat.
A lot of boats.
How does anyone ever buy a timeshare? Like if you ever listen to any radio station, there's always commercials. Get out of your timeshare. Call us at 1-800 get out of your timeshare. Timeshare.
Are you dying because of your timeshare? Call us. We'll get you out of your timeshare. Yeah, it's a bad look.
Would you like to buy a timeshare? Buy one, and then you can call us to get out of your timeshare. We've got buying timeshares and getting out of your timeshare. So get out of and buy your timeshare.com, and then get a boat.
So
a timeshare and the whole nine yards, maybe a big boat, a couple boats, you know, a lot of boats.
If you had won the lottery, Connor, or half the lottery, or a tenth of the lottery, would you buy a boat?
Yeah, I think if I had that kind of money to quite literally sink, I would definitely enjoy a boat. Yeah, put it out on Belmont Harbor, something like that. Go out there, you know, two or three times a week.
Would you stay in Chicago if you were the wealthiest guy on the planet?
Well, it depends on how much money you're telling me I won. Like, if you're saying I won boat money, then yeah, I'd probably go boat. I'd enjoy a boat.
You won $500 million.
Then I'm probably, you know, I'll come back to Chicago every now and again, maybe to visit the boat, but I'm going to travel.
A couple boats, you know, a lot of boats.
Because, you know, I was listening to, who was I listening to today? Whoever it was on 720 WGN was talking about how Chicago's the greatest city on the planet, and I love Chicago too. But if I had endless amounts of dough, I don't know if I'm signing up for this weather.
It's
just saying.
It's 4 degrees on Monday. Right. I'm pretty sure that if I won, you know, that kind of money, you know, last Wednesday night or whenever it was, that I wouldn't be here on Monday.
Right. I mean, maybe
I would find somewhere warmer to be.
Maybe I'd have a timeshare somewhere around 720 WGN.
Myrtle Beach.
Yes, and then I would live. 6 months of the year would not be spent in this fine land. I'd come back for the occasional Bulls game.
The good 6 months. This is one of the best. This is the best town in the summer in the world, I think. This is the best summer city in the world. And in the winter, we just kind of grin and bear it and talk about how it's the best summer city in the world, and hopefully that gets us through.
I do love it in the summer. I'd also like it if the city would get some things in order.
So Chris Long made his way around social media. I mean, granted, it was a local St. Louis broadcast, but it made its way all the way across Twitter and everything like that. That's where I saw it first. And he's not the only NFLer who's making his news on social media. Adam formerly Pac-Man Jones, made his apology on Instagram, of all places. Now, if you're not hip to the story, it was obviously the Steelers-Bengals game. Vontaze Burfict comes across Antonio Brown, who was not playing this weekend. Antonio Brown, wide receiver for the Steelers, not playing because he couldn't pass the concussion protocol. Vontaze Burfict knocked him out. Knocked him out. And then the whole brawl happened. Joey Porter got fined as a head coach. There was hair pulling and all this kind of stuff. Well, on the Dan Patrick Show that next Monday, day after the game, Adam Jones is promising people that Antonio Brown faked the whole thing, that he was winking at guys on his way off the field like, I got you.
Yeah,
I absolutely got that penalty called on you.
Not the best moment for Pac-Man.
No, it wasn't pretty. There have been a lot worse moments for Pac-Man Jones.
Most definitely.
This was a bad moment for Adam Jones. And he promised at some point, not during the interview with Dan Patrick, at least I don't think. I happen to be listening to that one. But later on, he promised he'd apologize only if Antonio Brown didn't play this weekend.
I actually was on Inside the NFL with Brandon Marshall, and I kind of got a little recap of everything.
Here.
So we'll just kind of play it real quick here.
If Antonio Brown don't play, if he doesn't play,
I will send out a apology.
Will you apologize and say that you were wrong?
I will. If he don't play. But you know and I know that when Saturday get here, he will be cleared.
He's part of the protocol. We took him through the protocol, and you know, we got to that point where we had enough information where we knew that he would be unavailable to us, so we made the decision.
AB, my apology, my brother. I'm a man of my word, man. Been doing a little traveling. It took me so long, but man, I apologize sincerely, man. Get well.
Heartfelt. Heartfelt, Adam. Really heartfelt. I don't buy the apology at all.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
I felt his apology.
Really?
He went to the AB.
He did. He did.
He went to the heart.
Yeah, he did.
And he gave a strong look into the camera. I mean, this is a guy who's had some incredibly rough moments off the field.
Yes, he has. Of his own making.
Yes, and you can go back if you want to read about it. It's 2007 in Las Vegas, and there's violence towards women, and there's guns, and it's as bad as it gets.
But that's not really here or there with how you treat a fellow player, a guy that you're accusing of. I mean, say what you will about what really this means, you know? But accusing a guy of faking it, faking an injury like that on I mean, as far as like what you can accuse a fellow player of doing, that's fairly low.
It's bad. It's bad, and he was obviously emotional, and the season was over.
And I saw that hit when it happened.
It was brutal.
It was ugly.
David Jennings in news.
It was. Seriously. I mean, I think I saw you could almost see his eyes kind of like, huh?
And he was on.
What happened?
And Adam Jones is on Dan Patrick saying he barely hit him. He missed him.
That's the scary part. I actually agree with him. He did barely hit him, but he hit him.
It doesn't take much.
It doesn't take much.
At that speed. Right. And at that spot, that location on the noggin, I mean, it just doesn't take a whole lot.
Right, and when you're Vontaze Burfict, who's a 275-pound linebacker, who's
got a history of being nasty.
Yeah, and he doesn't have an ounce of fat on his body.
No, that dude is in pretty... Well, right? Coming into the draft, he had put on a little bit of weight, but has since worked some
good,
things out.
Good knowledge of his pre-draft.
I watched a lot of Vontaze Burfict tape at ASU. I thought if somehow Vontaze Burfict could drop to the Bears, that'd be fantastic. I was unaware that he was as crazy on the football field as he is. I still wouldn't mind having that linebacker.
I mean, is anybody amazed that Connor McKnight was watching Vontez Burfict tape?
I got a thing for Arizona State football.
Why?
I don't know why. First job out of college, did a lot of travel, covered college football,
yeah.
And really loved the stop at Arizona State for a number of reasons. The football was one of them.
You got lucky at ASU?
All I'm saying is there's a bar called The Library.
Yeah.
In I think it's in Tempe.
Look at Connor.
And there were no books involved.
No, there weren't. No, there were not. There are books all over the wall. None of them actually come off the wall. It's just wallpaper.
And nobody cares
yep.
either.
Nope.
Congratulations.
Well, I wasn't really paying attention to the books. Not even a little bit.
As we go into break here, I just want to say I'm very proud of you, Connor McKnight.
Thanks, buddy.
You're a very talented, good-looking gentleman, and I will forever love you.
Thanks, guy. Do you want to read the news?
I'll read the news. This is
wait a minute. You can't let that go, Connor.
I have to.
No, you can't.
I have to.
It's as far as we're going to go here, Jennings.
All right.
That's the way it is.
All right.
I mean, it was a very tender moment.